Will everyone in the Missouri Senate please rise for the prayer by our chaplain, followed by the Pledge of Allegiance.
For the 27th Psalm we hear, waited on the Lord with patient expectations and fervent prayer. My Lord and God, we do wait patiently in prayer for your healing presence, for all those who were injured, killed, or suffered various losses by the tornadoes that hit our nation. It was a devastating storm that touched so many Americans, including many in Missouri, and we empathize with those hurting and pray for them. We also pray for Mrs. Spieler at the death of her father, and ask, O Lord, for your mercy and comfort during this time of grief by her and her family. Bless them and us, O Lord, and be an ever-present help. In your holy name we pray. Amen.
Amen. I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all. Secretary, call the roll.
Senators Brown, Callahan, Chappelle Nadal, Crowell, Cunningham, Curls, Dempsey, Dixon, Engler, Goodman, Green, Justice, Kevany, Kehoe, Kraus, Lager, Lamping, Lemke, Mayer, McKenna, Munslinger, Nieves, Parson, Pierce, Ferguson, Richard, Ridgway, Roop, Schaff, Schaefer, Schmidt, Stouffer, Wasson, Wright Jones.
Senator from Green, Senator from Jefferson. A quorum is present. The Senate is now in session. Secretary, read the journal.
Journal of the Senate, second regular session, 30.
Senator from 23rd.
Thank you, Mr. President. I move further reading of the journal be dispensed with and the same be approved as though having been fully read.
You've heard the motion. As many as are of the opinion it shall prevail, say aye.
Aye.
Those to the contrary, no. The ayes appear to have it. The ayes do have it. Reading is dispensed with. Senator from the 7th is seeking recognition.
Request unanimous consent of the Senate to correct the report made by the Committee on General Laws on March 1, 2012 by submitting the correct Senate Committee substitute for Senate Bill 744.
You've heard the unanimous consent request. Does any senator object? Hearing none, it is so ordered. Senator, send it forward. Need to read it. Okay, thank you, Senator. Introduction of guests. Senator from the 10th.
Thank you, Mr. President. On your left and my right, I'd like to introduce three very special guests who are in from Kansas City today. We have Sister Berta Saylor from Operation Breakthrough. She's been serving the families of Kansas City for over 40 years now. Also with her today, we've got Susie Rowling and Dave Watsula from Operation Breakthrough. Please make them welcome.
Let's welcome the guests of the Senator from the 10th to the Missouri Senate here today. Introductions, petitions, memorials, remonstrances, resolutions, concurrent resolutions. Senator from 23rd.
Thank you, Mr. President. Without objection, the Senate will do the order of business of Senate bills for perfection, the informal calendar.
Senate bill
470.
Senate bill 470. The senator from Green.
Thank you, Mr. President. I move Senate bill 470 be brought before the body.
You've heard the motion. As many as are of the opinion it shall prevail, say aye.
Aye.
Those to the contrary, no. The ayes appear to have it. The ayes do have it. The bill is before us, sir.
Thank you, Mr. President. I move that Senate Bill 470 be perfected. There is a Senate committee substitute, and I also have a Senate substitute to offer. It's been distributed and it's on the desks.
Thank you, Senator. Senate substitute forward. Reading will be waived as it has been distributed. Move the adoption of the Senate substitute.
Thank you, Mr. President. This bill...
Senator, move the adoption of the Senate substitute.
Yes.
Now you may proceed.
Thank you. There's only a slight change between the Senate committee substitute and the Senate substitute itself, but the essence here, this bill outdated barriers to economic growth and expanding opportunities to earn a living. It modifies provisions related to regulation of household goods movers in Missouri, and it updates a provision, it updates a process originally imposed in the 30s. It follows up on House Bill 430 and Senate Bill 58 from last year, and it reflects the provisions contained in the truly agreed and finally passed version with only a few minor changes, which was vetoed last year for reasons virtually unrelated to these particular provisions. I'd be happy to answer any questions. Otherwise, I renew my motion.
Does any senator wish to be heard? Senator from Cape Girardeau.
Inquire the senator from Green.
Does the senator from Green yield?
I do.
He yields, you may inquire.
Thank you for yielding. Senator, how was your weekend?
Very good. How was yours?
Good. Any wind damage in Green County, or was that pretty much in or a little bit south of where you were, I guess? No tornado damage in Green County.
We had some wind damage, but most of the damage was quite a way south of us in a Branson area.
Yeah, we had some as well in southeast Missouri. I had heard that most of it was in Branson area as opposed to in Springfield or Greene County area. But our thoughts and prayers go out with those that are dealing with all of that, I know.
Yes, of course.
I'm trying to figure out, and I appreciate your explanation, but I wasn't on the committee that heard this. If you could, for me, as just a simpleton around here, what is the problem, if you could, and then how your legislation fixes that problem? Because okay. if that's a fair way to put in context the legislation that you have, because most of the times I side out, let's do nothing unless there's a need for doing it.
I would agree.
Okay.
Let me give you some background. I think that's what you're asking me for.
Yeah. What's the problem, and then how does your legislation fix the problem?
Well, what we have in place right now is a very antiquated system where the state essentially is in place determining who's going to go into business or not. That's kind of it in layman's terms.
How does the state do that?
Well, just as a matter of background, I think this will answer your question. In Chapter 390.061, it provides that when a person seeks a permit to run a new moving company, the Missouri Department of Transportation shall notify all existing moving companies and permit them to intervene in the application process and object to a new application on the basis that a new company is, quote, inconsistent with the public convenience and necessity. If even one firm objects, the newcomer must attempt to prove that a new moving company is, quote, necessary. I can't think of, it sounds sort of like the situation with, it's almost like a certificate of need, if you will, or a certificate of necessity in the trucking industry for household goods movers.
And when we talk about household good movers, like I sell my house, I'm moving, and I want to hire day transfer or one of those type companies that will then ship my household goods. Is that what
Is
that what a household good is? We're not talking about distribution here.
No, we're talking about household goods movers. I can give you some more background on the case.
Okay.
Really brought this to light.
Sure.
In 2009. Michael Muni, who owned ABC Quality Moving, which was a household goods moving company, filed his permit application with MoDOT, and four established moving companies filed objections to his license application. All of them were arguing that a new moving business would, quote, permit substantial diversion of traffic from their own companies. And as a result,
so he was going to actually do it better and cheaper.
Yeah, we call it competition.
The consumers were going to pick him, and then these guys, sort of like the free market, was going to operate.
Exactly.
Okay.
Exactly. So as a result, this guy, Michael Muni, amended his request to seek permission to operate only in St. Louis, and he received that license. He also holds a federal license allowing him to move personal property from Missouri to other states. Later represented by attorneys at the Pacific Legal Foundation, he filed a civil rights lawsuit in federal court to challenge the constitutionality of the state law, asserting that it deprived him of his right to earn a living in a common occupation of his choice and in violation of the due process, equal protection, and privileges or immunities clauses of the 14th Amendment. Actions within the lawsuit, of course, you may be aware they were temporarily delayed as HB 430 last year, which I referenced in my opening remarks, worked its way through the legislative process. Now, when the governor vetoed this in early July last year, that delay in the lawsuit was ceased.
So how is this bill different? So we've already passed this bill once before.
Yes, that's correct.
In the General Assembly, and Governor Nixon vetoed it. How is this bill different than what we passed, I guess, last year, you said, or the year before?
It was last year. And
omnibus transportation
yes,
bill.
Thank
so
you.
Not
that might
necessarily
be a question.
Were these provisions what the governor disagreed with, but it was.
I believe that's correct, and that might be a question for the senator from the 21st.
Senator from the 21st says it got caught up with outdoor advertising, and
that is correct.
And
yes, that's
that,
correct.
If that refreshes your memory, if that's
so.
Okay.
I hesitate to say that this is exactly like last year's bill because it's
okay.
Not. I knew there were some changes. I couldn't think of the specifics.
Okay.
But as far as these provisions, we're doing the same thing, and with the substitute, it will be essentially the same as what
that,
we did
that
last
passed year. Last year.
Yes.
Okay. And then this will prevent all of your provisions are designed to fix that problem that we talked about, which is people being object barriers to the entry of our barriers to the entry of the marketplace dealing with household good transfer
these movers.
Basically
what
movers.
This bill does is it removes the geographic restrictions on interstate movers intra.
Okay.
It removes requirements for household good movers to file price schedules with MoDOT.
Okay.
It also prohibits household goods movers from participating in joint tariffs.
Okay.
There are other provisions, removes the restrictions on division of state
okay.
into
and
territorial rate areas. Yeah.
Okay.
I'm getting a little into right. the complicated stuff, but that's okay. We can go through it if you want
to
go
no,
through it.
No, I'm just
it removes all these restrictions that were kind of antiquated.
And just so you know, I hear what we're doing, and then I hear how we're going to remove all of these regulations, and I look at the bill, and it's 18 pages long, and it looks like there's a lot new regulations.
Yeah.
So are we removing regulations, or are we putting regulations in?
What
are
well...
we,
as you know, a lot
okay.
of the legislation that when we print, a lot of it is not things that are new, but it's the existing statute with the changes. So
well, there's a lot of underlined words in here
yeah.
and a lot of underlined sections that are in here. Like, and I'm saying it says, notwithstanding any other provision of the law, this is on page 2 of your substitute, we're not going to make these household good transfers porters in intrastate commerce disclose their rates, fares, and charges with MoDOT, but we're going to make them, what, publish those on a website? Is that what you envision?
No, they will not.
It says, in lieu of filing these schedules or rates, fares, charges, rules, or tolls with the State Highway Transportation Commission, a motor carrier transporting household goods and intrastate commerce shall maintain and publish its schedules of rates, fares, charges, rules, and tolls in every station or office as described in subsection 3 of section 387.050, and such rates shall be available for inspection by the State Highway and Transportation Commission, shippers, and the public upon request. Any motor carrier transporting household goods in intrastate commerce that fails to comply with the provisions will lose their license. So,
yeah.
If regulation is the problem,
they will no longer have to. They will no longer have to file that price schedule with MoDOT, and we're going to essentially, what we're trying to do here is eliminate that barrier to competition that's out there, and that certificate of necessity that MoDOT provides for someone who wants to go into this business.
But we're still going to make them publish their schedules of rates, fares, charges, rules, and tolls in every station or
and that
office.
That may be in accordance with some other provision that I'm not aware of.
Okay.
I can't answer that for you. I just know that we've worked this out with everyone involved. The geographic restrictions go away. Requirement for them to file their price schedule with MoDOT goes away. We prohibit the household goods movers from participating in joint tariffs. It removes the restriction on the division going into territorial rate areas. It removes the authority of the Missouri Highway and Transportation Commission to fix rates with reference to the transportation of household goods. It requires the demonstration of workers' comp insurance coverage compliance. It requires the establishment of consumer protection requirements, and it requires the Division of Motor Carriers to develop a complaint process. Okay. The listing of their rates is sort of, I guess the best way to,
okay.
Best analogy would be, it's like saying, you know, McDonald's is going to put their rates on a menu.
Trans fatty acid content.
You and I understand. Now that, you know, publishing those rates is one thing, making them requiring that they be published with MoDOT, I believe, is another, because MoDOT was actually operating this certificate of necessity program.
Now you said all of the parties that are involved have been, and this is my word, not yours, placated or addressed in this. Who were all of the parties?
Well, the first and foremost, we were trying to eliminate the barriers, and in talking with the household goods movers, one of their concerns was safety. And I think we've addressed that with some of the language in the substitute. I can get into specifics on that if you'd like to.
Meaning the workers' compensation and the complaint process and those consumer protection
that may be.
Type deals.
Okay. That may be. I was privy to many of the conversations.
I wasn't either. I know nothing about this, so I'm just trying to learn here. I'm not leading you down a path or a trap. I'm just trying to learn.
The only complaint that was out there was the St. Louis Taxi Cab Commission was a little bit concerned that this would affect them. Now, you might ask yourself, what does the St. Louis Taxi Cab Commission have to do with this? Well, the statute was written so poorly that it's all intertwined, and this has nothing to do with the St. Louis Taxi Cab Commission. So we very delicately had to make sure that their operations were not affected. That was not the goal of the legislation. The goal of the legislation was to get the state out of deciding who should be in business.
Okay.
And we do accomplish that with this piece of legislation, and we also leave the taxicab folks out of it.
Okay. All right. Thank you, Senator. Mr. President.
Thank you.
Madam President.
Senator from Cape.
If I could inquire the senator from the 21st.
Senator from the 21st, do you yield?
Yes.
He yields. Proceed.
Thank you for yielding, Senator. I believe that this bill went through the committee you chair, the Transportation Committee. Is that correct?
Right.
What are we doing here? What was the testimony? What did we hear? And then the only reason I ask in this context, I agree with the senator from Green that sounds like a barrier to the free marketplace, but I'm always hesitant, and I want a better understanding of when we say we're getting rid of regulations, we pass an 18-page bill to get rid of regulation.
Well, Senator, I did carry this bill last year.
Okay, and you carried it last year.
Yes,
okay.
And what you have is an industry that knows that they need to deregulate, but they still want some training wheels.
Okay.
And so that's the reason for some of the language that's in there. But what the national or the feds deregulated the moving industry probably 5, 7, 8, 10 years okay. ago. And so they can bid on it. You used to have these tariffs that you had to post.
Okay.
Now they can bid on a load. And so if you want to move from, Memphis to Cape, you can have people bid on the load. If you want
right.
to move from Cape to Kansas City, you got to go back to the tariff system.
Everyone makes the same or charges the same whether
supposed
you're
supposed to, and then you've got these got jokers running around with the truck
work for cash.
Yeah, yeah. But the whole idea is to allow the free market system. The intrastate business okay. represents about 5% of what the movers move.
Yeah.
And so they were having to file all those tariffs and
because this has nothing to do with the U-Hauls. Like every time I've ever moved,
no,
I just get a U-Haul and
no, this is hiring folks okay. come in and do it.
Okay.
And I think overall it's a major move forward. The reason
okay.
for some of the things that you're talking about is an industry that's needs. Still wants some training wheels, if
okay.
you will.
So we can't repeal them outright and keep the fragile agreement with competing
yeah.
forces.
But it is a major step forward,
okay.
and it will allow. For instance, if you wanted to move, and I had a truck empty, a crew stand here, I might want to move it for half of what I normally
right.
would, just to keep my
right.
people
working.
This would allow you to do that before you couldn't. Everything was you had trade territories. You couldn't move across the trade territories, and again, the certificate of need stuff was ridiculous.
Okay, all right, sounds good.
Thank you,
Senator. Thank you, Madam President.
Does any other senator desire to be heard on the pending motion? Seeing none, Senator from Green, you're recognized to close on adoption of the Senate substitute.
Thank you, Madam President. I close.
Senator from Green has moved for the adoption of Senate substitute for Senate Bill 470. Senator from the 13th. For what purpose do you seek recognition?
I had an inquiry before the closing. I was waving as I came through.
Senator, I'm sorry I did not recognize you. Senator, I think I've recognized you to close. Senator from the 13th, I apologize, but I have recognized him to close. But I will recognize you on the underlying motion when we get to that. Senator from the 13th has renewed his motion for adoption of the Senate substitute for Senate Bill 470. Senator from the 13th, you are correct. Senator from Green. Move for the adoption of Senate Substitute 470. All those in favor of that motion say aye. All those opposed say no. The ayes appear to have it. The ayes do have it. Senate Substitute is adopted. Does any senator desire to be heard on the motion for perfection for Senate Substitute? Senator from the 13th, for what purpose do you seek recognition?
To inquire the Senator from Green.
Senator from Green, do you yield?
Yes, I do.
He yields. Thank you.
I apologize, and I'm not going to delay you. And I do, too. I didn't realize you were trying to get in here. I would have waited.
This was a very small bill last year that the senator from Saline handled. And what piqued my curiosity is the senator from Cape inquiring of you. We dealt with a bill last year that was changing rates because we were dealing with an issue kind of that is outlived its need, I guess you could say.
Mm-hmm.
And it was just a small bill. Was this bill vetoed or just did not get passed last year?
It was vetoed. It was passed as part of an omnibus bill.
Okay.
And it did have...
Let me inquire the senator from Slane,
sure,
if you don't mind.
And I've got the bill here
message
from last year.
Oh, okay.
So I'll let you know if you talk to you, Senator.
You bet. Madam President.
Senator from the 13th, for what purpose do you seek recognition?
Senator from Saline.
Senator from Saline, do you yield?
Yeah, I yield.
He yields. Proceed.
Rehash me on last year. I mean, I'm at the stage I'm not going to stop this or amend it. Shame on me for going out and meeting with somebody about something else when I should have just stayed in my seat. I've learned my lesson, so for now on, when they ask me to go outside, I'm going to say I'm busy. I'm going to listen. If you want to talk to me, talk to me when I'm in my office. But this was a simple bill last year I think everyone agreed upon.
Yes. It was part of the Auburn's transportation bill that was vetoed because of outdoor advertising.
Just out of a historical nature, how many of your omnibus transportation bills have been vetoed in your career?
One.
One? How many have died the last day of session?
I think we've been pretty successful. I what we get do usually do is get about one every
You put out day. One a year, but we haven't had one for several years, and then the one that you finally did pass was vetoed. So in your legislative career, you have finally figured out let somebody else handle it and get it out before the last day of the
Absolutely.
Year? Absolutely. Okay. This was a simple issue. Now, going back, I remember you getting up and saying, these are the movers. And we had an issue that's been 40 years old. We need to change the game strategy.
Actually, this goes clear back to the early 30s. And it required a certificate of need, and you had to get permission from your competitors.
Correct.
And the rest of the feds have deregulated the industry probably 10 years ago. And so we were still requiring tariffs to be published here in the state. This aligns us basically with the federal requirements.
Now, I got a grasp of that. And the reason I'm kind of cutting you off, because I don't want to hold up the senator from Greensville, I do follow his lead a lot of times. Should I go back to him and inquire or stick with you on the issue of workers' compensation? Was that in last year's bill, something we needed to do this year?
He's probably fresher on that than I am. I think that the industry wanted to be sure that their competitors were paying workers' comp. And I, quite frankly, I don't know how we're handling it this year, so it'd probably be best to go back to the senator from Green.
Thank you. We're on the same page. Madam President.
Senator from the 13th, for what purpose do you seek recognition?
To re-inquire of the senator from Green.
Does the senator from Green yield for inquiry?
I do.
He yields. Proceed.
Thank you, Senator.
I'm looking through last year's bill here, and the provisions that we're talking about today actually begin on page 60 of last year's bill. And I am looking through here for that provision on the workers' comp. And I think that it is section 390.054.
I agree with what you have in the bill.
Yeah.
Okay.
Well, I want to make sure
I'm just trying to see why we haven't had this requirement in the past. Has there been complaints, or is this just a reassurance that they have workers' compensation?
I think it's just reassurance, and I don't know from the discussions. I'm sorry, I don't recall why we decided to reiterate that. That section,
telling you why I think, is about 7 years ago in 2005, I think we gave some of these carriers the ability not to offer. And if you're putting it back in because other carriers said it's unfair competition, I'm all for it. I'm just trying to grasp that.
Well, it's on page 12 of this year's bill. Let me see if I can, and again, in looking through last year's version, they're essentially the same thing, but there were just a couple of...
Let's go this route then.
It is in last year's bill.
It is.
Yeah, 390.054, the same section, was on page 65 of last year's bill, so it was adopted last year. But like I say, it was passed, but the governor vetoed it because of the provisions related to, unrelated to this bill at all. It was something else in the omnibus bill.
You mean in the senator from Saline handled the vetoed bill?
It was the omnibus bill that he carried, yes.
Like I was joking with him, all his bills either die the last day of session or get vetoed. Well, we're going to call him the death or veto senator. Okay, I apologize for slowing you down.
He tilled the earth on this one, let me say, because this is a very
complicated
issue.
Well, I hate to bring it to you, but I'm pretty sure this bill will come back 2 weeks before the end of session, probably 200 or 300 pages instead of 18 pages. So I will probably inquire of you the second last week of session on your conference committee report that's 300 pages at that time.
Oh, goodness. Okay? I hope that we're not having that conversation, but if it gets to that, I'd be happy to.
Well, I'm going to be one of those ones this year after watching what transpired the last day of session last year, so everyone knows. I'm not going to sit down and let a bill come on my desk my last year of ever serving 300 pages and not find out what's in the bill.
I think we always owe that to the people.
Thank you, Senator.
Thank you.
Does any other senator desire to be heard on the pending motion from the senator from Green? Seeing none, Senator, you're recognized to close.
Thank you, Madam President. I renew my motion.
The Senator from Green has renewed his motion that Senate substitute for Senate Bill 470 be declared perfected and ordered printed. As many as are of the opinion that that motion shall prevail, say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, say no. The ayes appear to have it. The ayes do have it. The bill is declared perfected and ordered printed. Senator from the 23rd.
Thank you, Mr. President. On that same calendar, Senate Bill 480.
Senate Bill 480. Senator from Saline.
Thank you, Mr. President. Madam President, I move that Senate Bill 480 be brought before the body for perfection.
You've heard the motion from the senators from Saline. All those in favor of that motion say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed say no. The ayes appear to have it. The ayes do have it. The bill's before the body.
Madam President, I now move that Senate Bill 480 be declared perfected and ordered printed. This is a bill to modernize the common carrier law here in the state of Missouri. The present law requires that trucking companies put themselves out as for the general public to engage, and some of the things that we use are such things as being in the yellow pages or what have you. This allows very, very few loads are ever done through the yellow pages anymore. It's done through brokers and loads online. This just gives the Department of Revenue a clear indication of who should be paying the sales tax and who shouldn't. I'll be glad to answer any questions.
Senator from Saline, may the chair inquire of you.
Yes.
You have a Senate committee substitute, correct?
I don't think so. Do we? Oh, okay. I'll move for the adoption substitute. It'd be nice if I had a copy of it.
The senator from Saline has moved for the adoption of Senate committee substitute to Senate Bill 480. Does any senator desire to be heard on the pending motion? Senator from the 13th, for what purpose do you seek recognition?
To inquire
of
the senator from Saline.
Senator from Saline, do you yield?
Yes, I do.
He yields. Proceed.
Okay. What's the fiscal note on this?
Well, now it's down under, after the perfected bill, we'll have something less than $1 million. I think the Department of Revenue put a $7 or $8 million fiscal note on the original bill. The problem we have is nobody knows exactly what this is going to be. The majority of it is going to be highway funds. This is sales tax it'll be on highway funds. But what's happening is Tracker, for instance, instead of companies registering trucks in the state of Missouri, they open up a post office box and a forwarding phone in other states, so they don't have to pay this tax. And in the process, we cost these trucks are registered out of state, and we lose some local property tax and what have you. This is our law is just antiquated, and this brings us up just modernizes the law and catches up with federal regs.
Senator, you have been preaching for years we need more monies for the road fund, and here we're taking monies out of the road fund.
Really not. I mean, we honestly don't know how many dollars that we're losing because of companies registering in other states. The Tracker boat, for instance, instead of registering in Missouri, they're now using an Oklahoma address. I think
not all states do this tax.
No, Arkansas doesn't do it. Oklahoma doesn't do it, and
Arkansas and Oklahoma have a higher gas tax.
I don't know about that, but they do not. They don't charge this, and they're actively pursuing our companies, and we're losing registrations into other states. Let me give you an example.
You can give me the example, but you know nobody wants to pay taxes. And I was on a radio show Friday.
Thank you.
And the dialogue was tax. There you are. You're a Democrat. There you all. You go again, wanting to tax. I want to stand on the Senate floor and tell you I am a Democrat. I don't like paying taxes, okay? But I know we have to pay taxes to get services. I know we have three major interstates that are crumbling. And I know we have to be competitive with other states. But we can't keep standing on this floor when industry comes and says, we need to do this to make this fair with other states. It's going to cost money to the road fund. We've gone from $600 million We've gone from $1.2 billion to $600 million in construction. We just can't keep operating this way, and we are.
Senator, you know, I know those numbers as good as anybody does. This is really, we are putting our trucking companies at a severe, and it's not the major ones. It's not the big ones, because they already get this tax. What it does, and I'll use ProFoods as an example. It started.
I don't know who Pro Foods are.
So well, it's Champ Chickens. Let me. It's a trucking. It's a food company that started in Willard, Missouri, in a garage. And you can help me out on the numbers, but they now have Champ Chickens in 30 states. They 80 to 100 employees, and so they have grown. And what happens is that when they expand outside of the state of Missouri, then they get a backhaul to haul, you know, so the trucks, I mean, they develop
a backhaul. That's when I got an empty truck in Wyoming. I find something to load it so I'm not driving an empty trailer
backhaul. Right, and so they have a logistics, they create a logistics department, and then this tax puts them at a disadvantage to everybody that they're competing with, and this just it constricts the growth of new companies is basically what this does. The big companies, the ones that you recognize on the road all the time, they get this anyway. Thank you. And so this is a constriction on new companies that are growing in Missouri. We had one.
Help me understand.
We had just one more thing. We had one gentleman in the hearing that testified that he had put off buying I think it was 6 or 8 new trucks and 10 or 15 trailers for 18 months because he didn't know how the department was going to. He was under they were auditing him, and he asked, what do I need to do going forward? We're worried about what's already happened. But it had been 18 months, and they had not been able to tell him what he needed to do to qualify. And so it is one of those things that has a tendency to constrict the growing companies here in the state. And this is just a way to remove, thank you. I keep getting more and more pieces of paper. I'm going to be well informed here in a minute.
I'm sorry. What?
I'm sorry. That was being facetious at that point.
Okay, fiscal year 2011, approximately 12,000 commercial motor vehicles registered with 24,000-pound plates and paid more than $8 million in state sales and use tax.
That, are you looking at the original fiscal note?
Yeah.
Okay. That's been, the Department of Revenue have moved that down to about less than $1 million at this point. I think the perfected bill, you'll see less than $1 million.
What did you do lower that under $1 million?
I think that this is something the Department of Revenue was not going to support anything that reduced general revenue. And as we have talked through the process and as we have come up with examples of companies that are registering outside the state, they have lowered that down. The honest truth is nobody knows exactly what that number is going to be. I think that we have determined through the process that it's going to be less than $1 million at this point. It started out, what they did was take all
is determined it's less than $1 million.
The Department of Revenue.
Department of Revenue.
Yeah. When they started out, they took all the trailers in that class. And then as we continued to communicate and figure out what the definitions were, we moved it down to the point where they were able to eliminate about $7 million of that. I can't tell you that it won't be able to. The original fiscal note was $100,000. So, then again, we're in the process of working that down. I think that when I talked to their liaison a while ago, they're very comfortable with the bill the way it is.
The Department of Revenue is comfortable with the bill the way it is.
That doesn't mean there won't be some more refining of definitions as we learn more, but I think.
I'm not going to inquire. I just want to close with this thought. It's we're dealing. I need to just quit doing radio shows. Because I'm sitting there today in an interview. I was with the senator from the 24th, and the House Budget Committee's doing their markup. And they came up that we are going to salve all the governor's cuts to higher education. Great, I'm all for it. But what is it you're going to cut now? Something, it's a domino effect. If you resupplant the money one place, you're going to cut it somewhere else. Okay, so as we all know, when it comes to cutting, we always hit the hardest, social services and mental health. And I've always been an advocate for the developmentally disabled. Some of those cuts that they're dealing with this week in the Budget Committee come from the monies that help the developmentally disabled. Once again, they're the last rung on the ladder. Okay.
Senator, you know
and
that
I see this
way.
In I
also see the need for more infrastructure improvements. If we want to become an economic engine, if my office is listening, that'll be fine, okay? 48 years old, you lose your train of thought very easily. Does it get worse?
It gets worse, Senator. Let me clear you. Hey, but the good thing is that every day is a new day, and, you know, you just keep discovering things over and over again.
Right. And I'm with you and the Senator from Cole bringing up some of these very controversial issues to find a funding mechanism, not just to put construction people back to work, but to create infrastructure, because two of the biggest things, no matter what we can say about all the other issues, infrastructure and energy costs are the two biggest things.
Senator, you know how that's where I'm at.
We sat here and we were in special session. I was in a radio interview about that also this past weekend to probably the senator from Cape's agreement. I said, what's wrong with sunsetting and make all these interest groups come back up to future legislatures and say, this is a great program, pass it again. That's a separate issue, but we're trying to become this airtropolis, this economic engine of distribution in both Kansas City and Missouri. And that I-70 corridor is so important. As you well know, and I'm preaching to the choir, nobody really wants to talk about it. I think what I've read today is the speaker's promoting another study commission to study. I hate to break it to them, but the answer is going to be you need more funds to build new roads, okay? They got about 7 over in the library. They have dust on them, but just read those. You don't need to do another study. But it goes to the fact that everybody needs these tax exemptions or breaks so that they can compete with other states. And we're not going to have any revenues to continue to fund the needs we have, whether it's infrastructure. I'm not going to stop your bill.
I understand.
And I know you 1 year introduced the $2 billion sales tax increase, right?
Well, you talk about the first one, it's 7, but who's counting?
Which one? But one of them you introduced when you sat way over there, and everyone came to me, oh, that's crazy. I says, at least get it out there and get it discussed. We never went that far, and I don't know how far we're going to get with the toll roads. But we have to start getting up every time an industry comes up and says, to stay competitive, we need this cut. I'm all for it. But you cannot keep taking money from these road funds, from these general revenue. You just can't do it.
Senator, I agree with you 100%. I will tell you, though, that is the opinion of MoDOT and the Department of Revenue, although it's very difficult to work this out. But with the increase in jobs that will be created by not having these companies move out, the increase in local taxes by not having them registered in other states, that this really will be a wash, or be a positive effect. But it's really difficult to anticipate it's hard to get it on a fiscal note. And I think that virtually everybody I'm working with.
Wonder how accurate these fiscal notes are half the time anyway.
I can tell you that everybody's on the
Those
same page.
Ways.
This is a necessary. This modernizes our carrier, motor carrier definitions.
Thank you, Senator.
Thank you.
Does any other senator desire to be heard on the pending motion? Senator from the 11th, for what purpose do you
Madam
seek
President,
recognition?
Madam President, could I speak to, I'm sorry, could I inquire of the Senator from 13th?
Senator from the 13th, do you yield for inquiry? Senator from the 13th, do you yield for inquiry? Senator from the 13th, we're having a hard time seeing each other today, aren't we?
I'm the one with white hair.
Okay. Do you yield for inquiry?
Yes.
He yields. Proceed.
Thank you, Madam President. God, that was about the longest yielding process.
You ever have a quiet day, and all of a sudden, in a half hour,
second floor.
All of a sudden, in a half hour, everything just kind of comes at you. So, go ahead.
I was just curious, and I haven't inquired of the Senate, the sponsor of the bill, but you did bring up the fiscal note, and I guess one thing that I didn't completely understand in the fiscal note is,
It seems to say that this is going to cost less than $100,000 annually, right? And then
that's what the most recent fiscal note does say.
But then there's this quote: "This act would reduce the motor vehicle sales tax revenue MODOC receives because it would expand the sales tax and use of the tax exemption, which is currently not available to common carriers, to all motor carriers. MODOC receives motor vehicle sales and use taxes as provided by the Missouri Constitution. This proposal would reduce vehicle sales tax revenues distributed to MODOC, cities, and counties."
Yep, there is
a portion. You have a lot of experience, obviously, in your time in the budget. It seems to me that they're saying two different things. They're saying, well, it's less than $100,000, yet why would you make that following statement after that?
Well, when you pay, I'll use the example, when you pay the sales tax on the purchase of the vehicle, they ask you, what community do you live in? Because a portion of that goes to the local community. What the senator from Saline is saying is, it's a wash because we're losing these businesses. They're putting a P.O. box in another state so that they don't have to pay it, and we're losing the revenues of not having that business in the state of Missouri by having this. So it'd be a wash of the businesses that we would retain instead of lose. So it's 6-1 or a half dozen to another. My whole premise of the inquiry was, we can keep cutting taxes or we can keep cutting services. Pick which one you want to do. The senator from Saline feels it's a wash. I'm not going to hold up his bill, but it's like I think one of the few that voted against the phase out of the corporate tax. It was $80 million. They said, because next year, all these different government entities are going to say, we need this, and now we're dealing with nobody wants to cut. I hate to break it to a lot of you, but I've never had a problem with cutting. So nobody wants to listen to where I want to cut.
Right. So. Thank you for the inquiry, Senator.
Thank
Madam
you.
President, may I inquire of the Senator from Saline, briefly?
Senator from Saline, do you yield to the Senator from the 11th?
I do.
He yields. Proceed.
Senator, I was just kind of curious why in the fiscal note it kind of makes it sound like it's saying two different things. Senator from 13th, and I did hear your discussion with him, these companies are just avoiding this by doing a P.O. box somewhere.
Right.
But okay, so there's Senator, this total tax pool is about $8 million. Is that right?
Well, that they started out with a $100,000 fiscal note, and then they went to an $8 million fiscal note. As we've tried to discuss this and do more research, they're back under $1 million. And quite frankly, it's a number that's very difficult to tie down because it's hard to put a number on those that we've lost, which may come back. But what this, the effect of this definition the way it is now is to constrict the growth of new businesses as they grow from a carrier that a private carrier where they haul their own stuff, and as they expand out into other states, they need a backhaul, so then they become a common carrier. And what we're trying to do is draw that line so that we know exactly who gets the breaks and who doesn't, and so that so that everybody knows what the rules are. I think we'll find that we'll have more employment here in the state instead of running businesses out of state. We've got two states around us that are very aggressively trying to recruit these. The Pro Foods that I was talking about, Arkansas said, come on down, you won't pay any taxes. And they don't want to move. And that's been settled. I mean, they have finally come to an agreement with revenue that they have, and that one's off the shelf right now. But this just makes it clearer definition, modernizes us with the federal rate.
The lack of certainty in the fiscal note is based on they can't calculate that Pro Foods may come back to Missouri.
Well, actually, Pro Foods is staying here, it's very difficult to determine who it actually affects,
And I think that the big universe where you took everybody in that class and said that was $8 million, most of those were already exempted, so that got it down under $1 million again. And I think that it's been very difficult to find that number, but the more research we did, the more we were able to hone the number.
I noticed in the hearing, MoDOT, or none of the cities or counties, but MoDOT didn't testify. What's MoDOT's position on the bill?
They are in favor of it. I mean, they don't object to it.
Right. They didn't testify for or against, right?
Right.
Okay.
Right. And I think one of the other things is that when you go to the common carrier area, then you pay federal excise tax instead of local sales tax, and then that's redistributed to the cities and counties. And so it's. I think in the end, it's probably not going to be, it will remove a constriction on growing companies, and I think it'll eventually have a positive effect on revenue.
Would any of this revenue also, you talked about other states, under NAFTA, how does NAFTA treat, like, truck companies in this category from Mexico? I guess what I'm saying is we're in this thing where, well, the other state doesn't charge this and we're at a competitive disadvantage. Are we aware, okay, if that may be true, okay, we now go to the Arkansas standard or we adopt these, and we go through this in economic development all the time. We adopt what the other state does, but guess what? There's somebody else who's also undercutting us as a country, as a state. And I guess what I'm
not
is...
I'm not sure that discussion... I don't think this bill affects that discussion. This is really... The major trucking companies, the ones you see run up and down the road all the time, are already under this, and they don't pay the... They don't do it anyway.
Right.
This is the trucking company that starts out as a mom-and-pop carrying their own stuff and then grows, and once they start exporting what they make here into other states, they need to have backhauls to help reduce the cost of transportation. They develop, instead of just being a manufacturer, then they have a logistics department. And this draws the line this gives revenues direction on when they are a common carrier and when they're not.
Okay, thank you for the inquiry, Senator. Thank you, Madam President.
Does any other senator desire to be heard on the pending motion? Seeing none, Senator, you recognize the close on adoption of the Senate Committee Substitute.
I close.
Senator from Saline has moved for the adoption of Senate Committee Substitute for Senate Bill 480. All those of the opinion that motion shall prevail say aye. Those opposed say no. The ayes appear to have it. The ayes do have it. The Senate Committee Substitute is adopted. Senator from Saline.
Madam President, I now move that Senate Bill 480, as amended by the substitute, be declared perfected and ordered printed.
You've heard the motion from the senator from Saline. Does any senator desire to be heard on that motion? Seeing none, Senator, you're recognized. Close.
I close.
Senator from Saline has moved that Senate Committee Substitute for Senate Bill 480 be declared perfected and ordered printed. As many as are of the opinion that motion shall prevail, say aye. Those opposed say no. The ayes appear to have it. The ayes do have it. The bill is declared perfected and ordered printed. Senator from the 23rd.
Thank you, Mr. President. Madam President, pardon me. Stay on that calendar. Senate Bill 492.
Senate Bill 492. Senator from Cape.
Thank you, Madam President. I move that Senate Bill 492 be brought before the body.
You've heard the motion from the senator from Cape. All those of the opinion that motion shall prevail say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed say no. The ayes appear to have it. The ayes do have it. The bill is before the body. Senator from Cape.
Thank you, Madam President. I think there was an amendment pending from the senator from the 10th. I know that there's a Senate substitute pending. What I want to do is I want to send...
Senator...
I think before I can act, we need to bring the senator from the 10th back in. She has the floor with her amendment, I think.
That is correct. And the senator from the 10th has just entered the chamber. Senator from the 10th, the senator from Cape has brought Senate Bill 492 before the body, and we believe that at the time that that was put on the informal calendar, you had an amendment pending. And you have the floor.
That's my understanding, Madam President. Madam President?
Senator from the 10th.
I inquire of the Senator from Cape.
Senator from Cape, do you yield? He yields. Proceed.
Senator, last time we talked, you had indicated you might have a substitute. Is that correct?
I have a new substitute. It has been distributed. Just so you know what my intention would be, if we're on your amendment, but if you were to give up the floor, then I would ask that my Senate substitute that's currently pending be sent back. The new substitute that I have that is already distributed that I then would move for the adoption to would be basically the same exact substitute except removing the changes to the judiciary's retirement system from the legislation, ostensibly what your amendment would do.
Okay, Senator, and at this point, all I need to do then is sit down and you can execute that plan. Is that correct?
I think so, and then your amendment would go away at the same time that I asked that the Senate substitute currently pending be sent back.
Sounds like a great plan. Thanks, Senator.
Thank you.
Senator from Cape.
Thank you, Madam President. Could you send my pending Senate substitute back?
Madam Secretary, please send the current Senate substitute back to the sponsor.
Madam President.
Senator from Cape.
I have a substitute. I'm sending it forward. It has been distributed. I would request a waiver of the reading, and I would move for its adoption. For the benefit of the body, this substitute ends in .06.
Hearing no objection, the reading will be waived. Senator, would you like to explain your Senate substitute?
Yes, Madam President. I appreciate it. As discussed previously with the Senator from the 10th, what we are trying to do here is we're trying to get rid of Missouri's four different types of pension systems. The four different types of pension systems are for what I will call regular frontline state workers. Then we have a separate benefit package for statewide office holders. We have a separate benefit package for members of the Senate and House. And we have a separate benefit package for members of the judiciary. What this Senate substitute tries to do is it takes four separate benefit packages and turns them into two. So there will only be two remaining benefit packages. A benefit retirement package that we offer for the members of our judiciary, and then a benefit package that we offer for all of their state workers. I would be happy to answer any questions. Otherwise, I renew my motion.
The senator from Cape has moved for the adoption of Senate Substitute Senate Bill 492. Does any senator desire to be heard on that motion? Senator from the 11th, for what purpose do you seek recognition?
May I inquire of the senator from Cape?
Senator from Cape, do you yield?
Yes.
He yields. Proceed.
Thank you, Senator, for yielding. I'm aware of what has happened on the bill, and your new substitute takes out, doesn't deal with the issue of the judiciary?
Correct, Senator.
Okay. And so... that would have been retirement system number 5, right, if it had been included?
It would have been retirement system number 4. I am...
Now you're down to 3.
Right. Okay. Well, we'll be down to 2.
Right.
So I'm also not including the fact that we have a different retirement package for highway patrol officers. So I guess, in essence, we could have 5 retirement packages if we include MoDOT and the highway patrol that's there. So... but really, that is managed by a different system, not the Mosher's boards. That's managed
Emperor's.
By Emperor's. So all I'm dealing with is the benefit packages that are offered Mosher's. To our state workers that are defined benefit in nature. In the interest of full disclosure, there's 2 more plans that are out there, the deferred compensation plan, and then we have Krupps. And Krupps, C-U-R-P-S, is a defined contribution plan for faculty members of universities.
Okay.
I'm not addressing that. I don't mean to confuse everyone. There's
no.
just a lot of
lot of retirement plans, but you asked the question, so I wanted to give you a full answer.
I just want to make sure. Then on the savings, I'm trying to remember your, I have your other chart from the first bill.
If you look at the...
I see that in this, with just the Senate substitute, 06F, you're saving $6.4 million by 2022.
Correct.
Wasn't this, including the judiciary, wasn't that figure around $25, $26 million?
It was $26 million with the judiciary. Without the judiciary, it is $6 million for 399 people. So
399.
I'm a realist. I understand that we're not going to get those reforms to the judiciary, but I think people should know that 399 people, there's 399 judges. It's going to cost $20 million over 10 years to keep, whereas if we moved them to where everyone else is, you could save that for 399 people.
Wow. And there's only 200 of us. There's only 200 of us, right?
Say again?
200 elected officials, some odd, what, 190?
Yeah, 163 House members, 34 state senators, and however many office holders there are. But, you know, we're not dealing with a lot of people, so to have the amounts of savings from redefining what the benefit package would be on all of that is indicative, I think, in illuminating of how rich these benefit packages really are.
Okay. All right, that was the point I wanted to kind of make, was that we'd gone from, by removing the judiciary, 350 to 400 people, we're no longer potentially saving almost $20 million because of that.
We would have saved $23.7 million with the judiciary over a 10-year period. Without the judiciary, we are still saving $6.4 million over the next 10 years.
Okay. Thank you.
To put this in context, if this passes, now that's a big if. If this passes, to put in context of all the legislation that we've passed in the General Assembly, this will take us up to almost $1 billion of legislation that I've authored that'll save us or save the taxpayers almost $1 billion over the next decade.
You're making a reference to the retirement thing.
Anyone else? Just off of pension reforms, reductions, however you want to categorize them.
Okay. Thank you, Senator.
Yes.
Does any other senator desire to be heard on the pending motion? Senator from the 4th, for what purpose do you seek recognition?
To inquire the senator from Cape.
Senator from Cape, do you yield?
I yield.
He yields. Proceed.
Thank you, Senator. And thank you for the substitute. I'd just like to, and thank you for this worksheet, this summary sheet. I'd just like to go through the section 104.1091 a little bit. This will be very short. I'm not trying to do anything.
Okay.
It modifies the interest rate on employee contributions from 4% annually. That's the assumed rate, I guess?
No, 4% is the contribution rate. So when we passed the new tier of benefits during the special session in conjunction with the Ford tax credits, one of the new things that I was insistent upon, and this was me, that our employees make a contribution rate. So even the judiciary has to, now after that date, if they came in for new hires only, make a 4% contribution rate. While we were debating this, there became the issue of what do you do with that contribution rate if someone doesn't vest? Okay?
Right.
And in the interim, now that we have a 10-year vesting period for most state workers, if they do not vest in that 10-year period, then they get their contribution rate back. Now, it also...
They get their accumulated contribution
rate. They get their accumulated contribution rate back. That's required. And then it's only fair that since we have their money for a while, that we give them some type of interest.
I agree.
Okay? And in the way in which we had previously calculated all of this, and we heard this topic from the... where are you from? 24th, from the senator from the 24th, right now we're guaranteeing that these individuals make a 4% return. And I think, like him, it's only fair that as the market fluctuates, we're not, you know, there's been a couple of years, if you could guarantee a 4% return, that's outstanding.
Right.
And so what we wanted to do is not tie it to Moser's returns or anything like that, because those could, you could end up losing money, but to say that, you know, we'll give you what the 52-week Treasury bill's interest is. So it's sort of a compromise. 4% was too rich. Tying it to Moser's, where you could lose money in any given period of time, was probably too harsh. Not paying any interest for the loss of the time value of your money was probably too harsh. So we kind of settled in on that.
Okay. And quite frankly, I'm very comfortable with that. But then the very last sentence clarifies that interest credits shall cease upon death. And
correct.
Clarifies that interest earned on contributions are included. The beneficiary. So cease upon death of a member. Does that mean, what are we trying to do there? Are we trying to get them upon the death of a member that they take their money out of the plan?
I'm sorry, I didn't hear that. I didn't hear your question.
The part that says clarifies that interest credits shall cease upon death of member and clarifies that interest earned on contributions are included in the beneficiary payments associated with employee contributions. I guess I'm not, what kind of clarification are we making there, Senator?
Well, we used to, and I think I want to make sure that I'm saying this correctly, it was possible to run through the end of a month instead of the actual time in which you passed. So if you died on the second day of the month, right, you would get credit all the way through the end of that month. And we just want to basically say, when you pass, you pass. And that's it. You're not going to continue to accrue retirement benefits through the end of that month. So they'll be prorated for that month instead of getting the whole month.
On the interest credit? Is that what we're doing?
Well, on the interest credit and on all of the applicable benefits.
Okay. Now I got an obvious question. Is that how we can – do we calculate pension benefits on a daily basis?
We will prorate them back. No, we do not calculate on a daily basis. No, we don't. But just like your – think of it like your taxes. If you sell your home in any given year and they're probated to the day in which – you know, so you take the entire year's taxes, you divide by the number of days in a given year, you prorate it to that day.
Right.
That's been the practice, but this is just language that we want to make sure that we're following.
Okay. All right. Thank you, Senator.
Does any other senator desire to be heard on the pending motion? Senator from the 24th, for what purpose do you seek recognition?
Briefly inquire the senator from Cape.
Senator from Cape, do you yield?
I yield.
He yields. Proceed.
So just a pragmatic substitute, Senator?
A pragmatic substitute? You know, I guess $6 million is better than no million.
That's where we were, you think?
Yeah. I understand people that view individuals that you try to recruit into the judiciary. As I've said on this floor, I do not believe that we should compensate people on the back end. I think we've come to a more mobile society. You look at the private sector, you look at most of the people that are paying for all of this government, the taxpayers, they are not compensated on the back end anymore. The taxpayers, their shareholder, you know, here taxpayers, as you very accurately say, are the guarantors of a prescribed benefit. That's not the way that it works anywhere else. We're in a more mobile
it's
society.
It's easier to pay in the back end.
Say that.
It's easier to pay in the back end.
It's easier to have future generations pay it
on
the back
point,
end.
Is that
because we're not going to be here.
Right.
So we can make everyone real happy and tell everyone, hey, we gave you this wonderful retirement package, and I don't have to worry about it. My grandchildren will have to worry about it. So, you know, prolonging the horrible lessons of the baby boomer generation, who I will say is the me generation, the gimme generation, is something I was trying to change, but
it's not just the recipients that are. I don't even blame the recipients that they deal with whatever system we put forward. I think it's us who it's less painful to pay someone's salary, have it be smaller today because that comes out of this year's budget, and it's easier to say, well, some General Assembly 20 years from now will take care of the rest of the cost of your employment.
That's where you get, like we did in the special session. I mean, you end up doing large movements that take almost tectonic storage of energy in order to be released to finally get something done, instead of being able to surgically deal with issues on an annual appropriations process and budget.
Missourians take great pride in its AAA bond rating. A lot of our counties take great pride in that fact, and a lot of that is attributed to the fact that we don't have any legal outstanding debt. But what you and I, what you know, because you've been focusing on it for so long, and I'm coming to understand, is the tens of billions of dollars in liabilities that we have embedded in our pension system, which that's every bit debt as any other form of debt. It's just not categorized as such. And I applaud your efforts. It's very difficult all your years here to get that $1 billion in savings. But as you know, it's just a tiny drop in that bucket of savings that will ultimately have to come home. So. I look at it as pragmatic, appreciate it, disappointed, and hopefully we get the $6.4 million saved.
It'll have to be left to you and those individuals that'll be here after the parties that start when I am no longer a member of the General Assembly. It'll be spending time, baby. The Gucci shoes and alligator suits, or alligator shoes and Gucci suits, man, they are counting down the days.
Does any of the senators desire to be heard? Senator from the first, for what purpose do you seek recognition?
Thank you. Madam President, could I inquire of the senator from Cape?
Senator from Cape, do you yield?
I yield.
He yields. Proceed.
Thank you for yielding, Senator. So you drop a substitute on this. The substitute,
ends in 0.06. 0.06.
Okay. And we have a chart that you also submitted that
brought just today that has a 0.06 or a dash 0.06 on it.
Right.
It's a one-pager.
Okay. And the substitute, how does it differ from the original?
The substitute is identical to the original, except we do not move the judiciary into the regular state worker retirement benefit.
Okay, so what the bill does then is moves the legislature
and statewide,
and why wouldn't we include the judges in that also?
Because I can't get that passed.
Why not?
It's been pretty apparent in the conversations that I've had with other senators that such a provision will not be allowed to be passed through the Missouri Senate.
So we should do this to the legislative branch of government. And we should do it to the executive branch of government, but we should not do it to the judicial branch of government.
Now, I think we should do it to everyone, okay? But I also know that I carry a heavy burden whenever I want to deviate from the status quo, whenever I want to pass a bill that deviates from the status quo. In the Missouri Senate, that heavy burden revolves around two core principles. Number one, I have to get the matter to a vote, and number two, I have to have a majority of senators be supportive of that move once we do get to a vote. And as my conversations with the senator from the 24th, if I had my druthers, we'd be doing something completely different. But because of the legislative process and the give and take apparent into it, and my desire to move us in the right direction, and hopefully future legislators will seize upon the issue that you are now and be able to get this done into the future, I'm willing to take one step forward as opposed to no steps forward.
You made an interesting point, Senator, about the concept of supporting paying individuals for their services on the front end rather than on the back end.
Correct.
Correct?
Yes,
that's something that you believe in and something that, you know, possibly, you know, whether you're talking about judges or talking about people that would run statewide or talking about legislators, that you might be able to attract, you know, somebody that might be more qualified, possibly. I certainly hear that when we talk about judges. The truth of the matter is that the judges are getting a raise in this budget as far as what was proposed. Are you aware of that?
I am not. I thought the House was going to do like some kind of lump sum deal, leave it to the judiciary, and the judiciary then would get their raises because they would administer their own budget.
The commission that actually sets out salaries, the salary commission, right, for the legislature and for the judges, gave the judges
a $3 million raise.
And then what happened with the legislative recommendation?
I think we voted them down. We voted those down, but we didn't vote down the judiciary.
Right. Okay. And then what about the statewides? Are they getting a raise?
I don't know.
They're not.
We voted them down as well.
Yeah, okay. They're not getting a raise either. So the judges are getting a raise. All right. And I don't have my budget book. I sent my staff up to get my budget book for what's proposed here. But I believe the Supremes are going from 137 to 147.
Yeah.
Okay. They're getting a $10,000 raise on the front end.
Yeah.
All right. And every other judge is getting a raise on the front end.
Yeah.
All right. But they can't get support of the people that'll kill a piece of legislation in here, all right, to change their system so that we can save the taxpayers money on these pension programs like is happening all over the place in the private sector and states all over the country because it's bankrupting the states. But again, here's another example from the pristine branch that says they're better than everybody else, okay? And they'll get their people that work within both of these bodies to carry their water so that they aren't treated like the other two branches. It frustrates me, Senator.
Hey, wait till you've been here 12 years. Or the senator from the 13th. How many years?
Senator, I...
22 years.
I applaud your integrity because I don't think I would have the same integrity that you have in that what you did was you said, despite that, I'm going to bring this bill to the floor and I'm going to do what I can do before I leave this body to save the taxpayers money as we move to the future, right? That's what you did. You know what I would have done? I would have killed this bill.
Yeah.
It would have never saw the light of day.
Right. It's still a reduction. It's not as good a reduction. And when you judge it against the status quo of where we are today, I still think it's a step forward. Oftentimes, and I've shared my views with this body, whether it's a discussion on tax credits or the start of a new program. If I, with my limited vision, my limited abilities, my internal proclivities and prejudices, can look at a bill and say that it is a net positive for its passing, then I'll support it and I'll try to get it passed. If I believe it's a net negative, then I'll do everything that I can to stop it.
How long does a legislator under this piece of legislation, how long do they have to serve before they're eligible for a pension?
10 years.
10 years. Do you know
just like state workers.
Do you know the average length of a legislator?
I would say the senator from the 13th is not average. But
no,
I think it's 6 years.
I think it's going to be about six years.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, and that's where, honestly, Senator, we had a long discussion in the pensions committee because I had another competing idea that would eliminate all pensions for statewide, for legislators and members of the judiciary.
Right.
And just get out of the business of all of it. But you know, working with the committee, understanding and respecting the fact that I am not entitled to pass a bill, that I carry a heavy burden when I want to deviate from the status quo. We have not moved forward with the elimination of fringe benefits that would save far more money to the taxpayers, but just to simply say and set up this dynamic. And the more I can set up this dynamic, I think the better off we're going to be. If we can get out of the business of creating special retirement packages for us that we could never afford to create for the frontline state workers, we're going to be so much better off. Senator, I became the chair of Pensions Committee 8 years ago. This is my 8th year serving in that capacity. And there probably will never, ever be another member of the Senate that has had the ability to focus on one particular aspect and one particular area of state law as in-depth as I have had the opportunity to do so chairing that committee. For the first 6 years, mostly that I spent there, I tried to keep people from adding special benefits. If you live within a county, not within a city, and you were elected to a special session, not in 1990, but between 1990 and 1980, and you know, you walk with a limp and you're left-handed and one eye's blue and one eye's brown, then your retirement shall be this. I can't tell you how many provisions that is there. The very first bill that I ever passed was the elimination of the Industrial and Labor Relations Retirement System, where we have a long history of members of this body and of the House serving for as short as a couple of days and more than tripling their retirement benefits. Because what they would do is they would take their years of service in the General Assembly and transpose all of those years of services into the new $100,000 a year salary that they only worked for a couple of days. And then they would retire on that higher salary with all of their years of services, and it would more than triple. And that was the first thing that I eliminated. And now that we're continuing this where we don't have these special retirement packages, if the pension system is woefully inadequate for a prison guard, or if the pension system for a prison guard is woefully inadequate for a judge, then it's woefully inadequate for a prison guard. And that's the way I look at it. You know, there's still going to be a difference in the retirement package because of the salary differences that are there. All right? Judges will still make more than the prison guard, but only because we pay them more. The formulary, the principles of all of it treats everyone the same. But I have a heavy burden. I want to deviate from the status quo. And I know that in the Missouri Senate, and I respect this because I've used it as much as any and more than most, that I must convince this body to, number one, allow me to take my proposal to a vote, and number two, I must capture 18 votes in order for it to move forward. So that's how I come to this bill. It's not what I wanted to pass. I would like to do even more, but it sort of is what it is.
Okay. I don't want you to have to filibuster your own bill here. Let me just so I've got those numbers accurate. The Supreme Court justice is going from 139,000 under the new pay raise, he'll go to 154,000. The other Supremes will go from 137 to 147.5. Your regular circuit court judges will go from 128 to 134.6. And the same for the associate circuits will go from 109 to 116. So it's a $3 million raise across the board. There's 409 judges, if anybody's interested. 409.
Right, that was 399, but okay.
409 judges, and their current salary is $47 million. With their raise, it'll be a little over $50 million. And you know what the approximate number of the cost of the legislature is as far as our salary, Senator?
I do not.
About $7.2
million.
Okay. So $50 million for the pristine branch, $7.2 million for the not-so-supreme branch. Pristine branch.
Yeah.
All right. Thanks for your efforts, Senator.
Thank you, Senator.
Does any other senator desire to be heard on the adoption of the Senate substitute? Seeing none, Senator, you're recognized to close.
I close.
Senator from Cape has moved for the adoption of Senate substitute, Senate Bill 492. All those of the opinion that that motion shall prevail say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed say no. The ayes appear to have it. The ayes do have it. The Senate substitute is adopted. Senator from Cape.
Thank you, Madam President. I now move that Senate Bill 492 is amended by the adopted Senate substitute be ordered printed and perfected, or perfected and printed, whatever.
You've heard the motion from the senator from Cape. Does any senator desire to be heard on that motion? Seeing none, Senator, you're recognized to close.
I close.
The senator from Cape has renewed his motion that Senate substitute for Senate Bill 492 be declared perfected and ordered printed. As many as are of the opinion that that motion shall prevail say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed say no. The ayes appear to have it. The ayes do have it. The bill is declared perfected and ordered printed. Senator from the 23rd.
Thank you, Madam President. Senate Bill 591.
Senate Bill 591. Senator from Polk.
Thank you, Madam President. I move that Senate Bill 591 with Senate Committee Substitute be called from the informal calendar and taken up for perfection.
You've heard the motion. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
All opposed say no. The ayes appear to have it. The ayes do have it. Senator from Polk.
Mr. President, this was actually a bill we heard earlier with the assessors, and I do believe there is an amendment pending on that.
Senator from Polk, you are correct. The junior senator from St. Charles has the pending amendment on that. And the senator from Franklin has the floor. The senator from Franklin has the floor. Mrs. Sergeant-at-Arms, would you please retrieve the senator from Franklin? Senator from Franklin, we are on Senate Bill 591, a pending amendment from the junior senator from St. Charles, and when it was placed on the informal calendar, you had the floor. So we're now going back to you, Senator from Franklin, on Senate Bill 591.
Thank you, Mr. President. I had concluded my inquiry. Thank you.
Further discussion? Further discussion. Senator from the 23rd, for what purpose do you rise?
Thank you, Madam President. I would like to withdraw my amendment.
The amendment is withdrawn. Further discussion. Senator from Clay, for what purpose do you rise?
I have an amendment.
Send the amendment forward, please. Senator, would you like to have that reading waived?
President, yes, I will request that the reading be waived. However, I'm not going to close on this amendment until it's fully distributed. I have asked that it be distributed, and I will be moving that the reading be waived.
Seeing no objection, the reading will be waived. Senator, right. Would you care to explain the amendment?
Yes, Mr. President, first of all, I move for the adoption of the amendment. What this amendment does is, I've been talking to the senator from Polk, senator from Cole, senator from Jefferson, different parties that are involved with regard to this legislation, and most importantly, the senator from St. Charles from 23rd. What the amendment does is it solves the problem that the assessors are facing
and that they believe that they have to negotiate with only one nationally recognized automobile guide. It gives them the opportunity to negotiate with numerous and come up with best price. However, they do finally have to negotiate with a single nationally recognized guide. That satisfies the concerns of the senator from the 23rd to make sure that everyone is assessed according to the single nationally recognized guide. The publication has to be approved in conjunction with the assessors and the state tax commission. The state tax commission also will approve four additional guides that are permissible for use by the taxpayer, so that we empower the taxpayer, and that if they do find a lower assessed valuation, they may take that into the assessor. The assessor has to adopt that lower value, and it shifts the burden of proof to the assessor to prove a higher value if one of the recognized guides, the approved guide, says that there is a lower value. Unless there are any questions, I renew my motion.
The senator from Clay moves the adoption of amendment number 2. Does any senator desire to be heard on that motion? Senator from the 11th, what purpose do you rise?
May I inquire, Senator from Clay?
Senator from Clay?
I yield.
Do you yield? She does. Proceed.
Senator, on the amendment, I heard your explanation. Could you go over the state tax commission shall approve four additional guides?
Yes. Senator, what the situation is right now, in talking with the senator from Cole and also the senator from Jefferson, who know a lot about automobiles and trade-in and nationally recognized guides, I was informed that there's probably up to a dozen. Senator from Franklin. I knew it was one of the founding fathers. Senator from Franklin. Senator from Franklin and the senator from Cole. And I was informed that there are numerous guides, maybe up to a dozen, that it would not be difficult at all for the state tax commission to approve at least 5 or 6. So we arrived at the numbers in the amendment that they should have no difficulty. That gives the assessors the flexibility of negotiating with all of those that are approved, so that basically one nationally recognized guide cannot hold them hostage, financially hold them hostage, so that they have to buy theirs. They get to negotiate with the different guides that are approved by the state tax commission.
Define negotiate. I mean, is this going to lower, increase? What? I mean, if you have four guides and I assume they all disagree.
Well, what we're talking about negotiating is, because the law used to require the National Automobile Dealers Association, the NADA guide.
Right.
We were told by the assessors organization that as a result, NADA was basically playing stick-em-up, because we had, in the words of the assessors, they believe we had authorized basically a monopoly. And so NADA wanted to charge tens of thousands, or maybe $100,000 or more for our assessors across the state to use the NADA guide. As a result, the assessors were seeking some relief from that, and I can tell you about my experience in Clay County, but as a whole, the assessors were seeking relief from that, so that the tax commission could say, okay, look, all of these guides are okay to use. Now, assessors, you all go out and figure out who can give you the best price on the most reasonable values, so that the state of Missouri isn't basically writing a blank check to NADA to charge the assessors anything that they want for the use of their guide. Does that make sense, Senator?
Yeah, I'm starting to understand it more. I'd heard the discussion the other day. I just didn't know. I mean, I know we have essentially, I don't know how long that requirement's been there, a decade or so.
I believe it was in the 80s that it was originally placed, when maybe they just...
Well, it's kind of odd, as you know, to sometimes see in statute a reference to what is a industry guide, you know, which I don't know that that's great law to begin with, but I'm sure they had to grapple with some standard of some kind.
I wasn't here at the time, but it's my understanding that NADA was one of the first nationally recognized guides, and that's how it wound up in the statutes. It's all hearsay.
Right.
But I do understand that we need to clean up our statutes and probably get the specific name, trade name, out of our statutes.
Okay. All right. Thank you, Senator. Mr. President?
Senator from the 11th.
Could I inquire of the Senator from Polk?
Senator from Polk, do you yield?
I do.
He does. Proceed.
Senator, I didn't get the opportunity the other day on this bill to just ask you the basic.
When we say county assessor, is this bill applied to all counties, or is it just a county where there's an elected assessor?
Applies to all county assessors.
It would be all counties. Or does it define, I'm not seeing where.
I don't think it would have changed anything that wasn't there originally. Let me put it that way. And I'm trying to think now about first-class counties. You referring to first-class counties?
Yes. Okay. Okay, so it doesn't make any delineation that the assessor is elected, right?
What did you say?
It doesn't. This is all counties.
I think that's correct.
Okay.
I
mean, in Jackson County, we don't have an elected assessor. In your county, you probably do. Right?
Right.
Okay. So it's everybody. And what I'm getting at is, with this, if the amendment from the Senator from Clay gets on, while we have one guide now, was there any testimony from school districts or anybody as that this might have a detrimental financial impact? I mean, in rural Missouri, where there's more likely an elected assessor, and he or she has four different guides, is there a potential that they go with the lowest because they have to face election?
I believe in the Senator's amendment, it talks that you can pick four guides, and that would be the Assessors Association or members of them with the Tax Commission. And then for the taxpayer, if they went in there, they was assessed a certain value, and for whatever reason, one of those other books had a lower price. For the taxpayer, they could go to the lowest price.
Okay. All
right. So I would assume for the taxpayer, they're going to get the lowest assessed possible on the value of their vehicle. They would have that option out of those books that are picked by the association and the tax commission.
But the state tax commission, who, like, for example, the last bill we dealt with Thursday was an increase, right, in properties in rural Missouri. I mean, are they, you think that they'll pick four guides that are going to be pretty medium range? Or when we use this term, I'm not wild about in current statute. Okay. All right. I'm going to actually probably inquire the Senator from Cole if he doesn't mind. And I appreciate the inquiry, Mr. President.
Senator from the 11th.
President, if you would be so kind as to disturb the Senator from Cole and ask if he would permit me to inquire of him briefly.
Senator from Cole, do you yield?
Yes, Madam President, I do.
He does. Proceed.
Thank you, Senator. You know a lot more about this than I do. In rural Missouri, because there's the elected assessor, the tendency is that property taxes maybe aren't what they should be, okay? The consequence of that is, you know, coming from cities or the suburbs, our schools, the state compensates, our taxpayers, the state compensates their schools, et cetera. I mean, we heard that discussion a little bit on Thursday. Explain to me these guides, and is it going to create a situation where any taxpayer can just say, well, I the county's wrong, and I went with the lowest guide?
Well, I think, as the Senator from Clay said earlier, the current law listed a guide by name. I mean,
right.
I think that's what started this whole conversation, is that since whenever that law was passed, there's obviously dozens, at least a dozen, different valuation guidebooks. So the issue would be if, after the tax commission gives the approved list, the way I understand the bill, to the assessors to pick from, that there would also be additional four guides for an individual to have in case his or her assessor appraised their vehicle, in this case, at what they felt was an abnormally high value.
Okay.
That individual from the public could go to and say, here's some other guides that are also approved, and we see a little bit of difference. And guides can make huge swings in values, because some guides check auction values at a vehicle sale once a month. Some do it virtually, where they're following auctions every day, so they know the price of a car every day.
Right.
So online guides, for instance, have a lot more idea of what the present value is of a vehicle than another guide might have.
Okay, so is this sort of like, for want of a better term, sort of a blue book?
And yeah.
Instead of using one blue book where you have four options that the State Tax Commission would approve, and
right.
They're all going to be pretty close, except there might be some deviations.
Well, here's the deal. For instance, you mentioned Blue Book. Kelly Blue Book is one of the guides
right.
That's a well-known name out there and certainly does a great job. And where the issue comes down to, Senator, is if you have the valuation on, let's say, a Ford Taurus, that's a good car to pick, right? But a high-volume car that manufacturers make lots of, all of the books are going to be about the same on that car's value. You're not going to see these huge swings on a vehicle,
right.
a Chevy Impala, a Toyota Camry, something that you see a lot
Ford,
of on the road.
Ford Fusion,
absolutely. Good. Thank you for pointing that out. But where you get into these vehicles that are not as common, that's where some of the guidebooks can value those vehicles different.
Like the 68 Jaguar or a foreign made or something like that.
Exactly.
Okay.
It's these one-off vehicles that really the value really is made by the market and by the purchaser's eye. So 99% of the time, all the books are really going to be pretty darn close the same on typical volume vehicles.
I appreciate the inquiry, Senator. I don't want to delay the Senator from Colesville. He's getting that pensive, nervous look that he gets. I haven't seen that remnant. You'd have to go back to last year on the puppy mill bill to literally see that sort of pensive, nervous look that he gets on his face.
You know, and usually when you say the puppy mill bill, I have a little salute for the Senator from Polk, but I won't right now. And I think because he's a sheriff, that's the way sheriffs get.
I did see some nostalgic television over the weekend, and I was reminded of the Andy Griffith Show. And they had the episode that reminds me of the Senator from Polk, the one where the goat had eaten all the dynamite.
Yes.
And Andy and Barney had to lead it out of town with a harmonica.
Yes.
That kind of reminded me of him. So
I can see how it would.
All right. Thank you, Senator.
Yes, sir.
Further discussion. Senator from Buchanan, for what purpose do you rise?
Inquire of the Senator from Clay.
Senator from Clay, do you yield? She does. Just, proceed.
Thank you. Thank you, Senator. On line 9 of the amendment, on the front first page, it says, in conjunction with the publication will be approved by the State Tax Commission in conjunction with the association. And I'm just wondering, how will that operate? Because it seems to me that it may be a little vague.
Well, in practicality, what we're trying to do is not name an assessor's association like we goofed up in the 80s and named a specific publication. There is one organization, like the Missouri Bar Association represents the lawyers, the Missouri Medical Association represents a lot of doctors.
Well, that's not
We're not point. Naming them.
That's not what I'm getting at.
Okay.
What I'm getting at is, what does it mean to do something in conjunction with? What if the State Tax Commission says, we select book A and the association, I mean, what is their role here? What does in conjunction with them mean?
Because that language actually came from the Assessors Association, and I know they're okay with it. But
well, they might be okay. I'm just wondering what it means to do something in conjunction with, because the power of the Tax Commission isn't well defined there.
Right.
Do you understand my point? And just, I mean, I'm sure that later on in the process, I love your amendment. I just wanted you to think.
The way that it is supposed to work is the Tax Commission will say, okay, these five guides are all okay. They're all nationally recognized guides. Now, Assessors Association, let's work together to pick one that we think is reasonable. Probably what's going to happen in the way this is contemplated and the way that it's worked in the past is that they're going to get statements of cost from these different guides. And the assessors didn't want to be locked into having to choose one because obviously that's a monopoly, and so they can charge the moon if they wanted to. The assessors believe that they were charging the moon. And as a result, they're able now to get different price figures in and say, well, you know, Kelly Blue Book is about the same value, but they're going to charge 50% less than NADA. So Tax Commission, why don't you let us make that one the single recognized guide for the state?
That's fine with me. I just didn't know that those words actually put that into effect. And so I just wanted to have you think.
That's what's going on. The assessors group didn't want to be forced to shop at the NADA store. I understand their concerns. And so the only way that we could do it is get the tax commission to say, these are all okay, and now let's pick one out of that that all assessors in the state of Missouri are going to use. That way they can shop on price and quality for the cost of using that statewide, using that guide statewide. And then the taxpayer is still empowered, because any informed taxpayer has the opportunity to come in and say, well, but this one is lower and here's why, and then the burden shifts over to the government to prove it's higher.
Okay, that's fine.
It's the assessor's language.
Further discussion? Further discussion? Senator from Polk, for what purpose do you rise?
I'd just like the body to know that I do support the amendment. And
for what purpose do you rise?
Speak on the amendment.
Proceed.
Thank you, Mr. President. I just want the body to know that I support the amendment, and I appreciate the senator from the 17th working with me on this issue. Thank you.
Further discussion? Further discussion? Seeing none, Senator, you're recognized to close.
Thank you, Mr. President. I just appreciate the help that a whole lot of folks, including the senator from Franklin, has been concerning this issue, and the senator from the 23rd, as well as the senator from Cole and their expertise in drawing it in here, and the folks out in, you know, with the Assessors Association. I think we've got a good agreement here going, and I appreciate the senator from Polk and his support. I close on the amendment.
The senator from Clay moves the adoption of Senate Amendment number 2. All those in favor say aye. All opposed say no. The ayes appear to have it. The ayes do have it. You have adopted Senate Amendment number 2. Further discussion on the Senate Committee substitute? Seeing none, Senator from Polk, you are recognized to close.
Thank you, Mr. President. I renew my motion for the adoption of the Senate Committee substitute.
You've heard the motion. All those in favor say aye. All opposed say no. The ayes appear to have it. The ayes do have it. You have adopted the Senate Committee substitute. Senator from Polk.
Thank you, Mr. President. I move that Senate Bill number 591 is amended by the Senate Committee substitute be declared perfected and ordered printed.
You've heard the motion. Does any senator desire to be heard on that motion? Seeing none, Senator, you're recognized to close.
I close.
The senator from Polk renews his motion that Senate Bill number 591 be declared perfected and ordered printed. All those in favor say aye. All opposed say no. The ayes appear to have it. The ayes do have it. The bill is declared perfected and order printed. The junior senator from St. Charles.
Thank you, Madam President. Same calendar, Senate Bill 727.
On the informal calendar, Senate Bill 727, Senator from Buchanan.
Thank you, Mr. President. I move that Senate Bill 727 be taken up for perfection.
You've heard the motion. All those in favor say aye. All opposed say no. The ayes appear to have it. The ayes do have it. Senator from Buchanan.
Thank you, Mr. President. I now move that Senate Bill number 727 be declared perfected and ordered printed.
Senator, you have moved it to be declared perfected and ordered printed. Does any senator desire to be heard on that? And would you care to explain your bill?
Mr. President, I have a Senate substitute. It has been distributed. I'd ask for the waiver of the reading.
Seeing no objection, the reading will be waived. Send the Senate substitute forward. And, Senator, has it been distributed? It has been distributed. You've moved the adoption of the Senate substitute. Would you care to explain the Senate substitute?
Yes. This bill would help to eliminate the low-wage trap, which is also called the poverty trap. And what we're doing here is we would create a pilot program, and it would be done in one urban large daycare center, and we're targeting Operation Breakthrough in Kansas City, and one county, and we're targeting, I believe it's Butler County. And the idea here is that people who are receiving benefits from the state come to a point where if they earn one more dollar, they lose a significant amount of benefits, and this causes them to avoid earning that dollar. Either their employer will offer them a raise or a promotion or to work an extra shift. And because of the fact that if they take that raise or that promotion or work that extra shift, they lose maybe $3,000 or $4,000 worth of child care benefits, that causes them not to do it, and they end up being locked in poverty. And I distributed a color graph which shows the low-wage trap confronting a single parent of an infant and a preschooler in Missouri. And there really are two major cliffs. The first one is very close to the left side of the curve. And what happens there is the person loses their own Medicaid benefits because they reach the maximum of about 75% or so of the, I'm sorry, about 20% of the poverty level for an adult. And then the second cliff occurs on this graph, just below $2,000 a month for this family of three. Every different configuration of family and different numbers of children would have a different looking graph, but this one is typical, and anybody can look at that graph and see that a person earning just under $2,000 a month has really no incentive at all to earn another dollar. They almost would have to more than double their income in order to be better off at all once they lose benefits. And so what we need to do is we need to answer the question of if we were to allow them to continue to get benefits and pay a premium, how many of them would go ahead and take that extra shift, the promotion, the raise, and earn more money thereby work themselves out of poverty? So the proposal is that for those people who are receiving child care benefits, as of the effective date of the bill, that are in this pilot program area, if they sign up within 90 days, then they can participate, and those people would be allowed to earn more money and still continue to receive child care. And hopefully the amount of extra money that they receive will more than pay for the cost of the pilot program, which would last for 2 years. Now, because of the fact that they would be paying 6% state income tax, and we would set the premium at 44% to make it a nice 50%, that means that every time they earn $1 over the upper limit, then the state would receive 50 cents, and they would increase their take-home pay by 50 cents, which gives a nice, smooth reduction in the state's contribution to their child care, and eventually the amount of premium that they would be paying would be equal to the child care benefit, in which case they would quit paying it and they would work themselves off. There wouldn't be any woodwork effect. Woodwork effect means people putting themselves into a position to being able to take care of this, you know, to be on to this pilot program, because they're locked in. We're not going to allow anybody but who's already receiving it at the time. And I'm hoping that it would be a net benefit to the state. If it isn't, I'll be the first one to eliminate the pilot program in 2 years from now. But I'm hoping that this actually works and that we would be able to use the same method for all of the other cliffs that you see on this graph, and eventually come up with a comprehensive way of allowing people to smoothly work themselves off of welfare. The problem is there's about 50,000 people in Missouri who receive child care benefits, and we're thinking more than half of them have ganged themselves up just below the cliff. And so they are just literally locked into poverty. We've heard from many employers who tell us that their employees are in the situation. They won't take the raise. They won't work the extra shift. It's a drain on Missouri's economy. So with that, Mr. President, I'll be glad to answer any questions, and I renew my motion.
The senator from Buchanan moves the adoption of Senate substitute for Senate Bill 727. Does any senator desire to be heard on that motion? Senator from the 14th, what purpose do you rise?
Mr. President, I'd like to inquire of the senator from Buchanan.
Senator from Buchanan, do you yield?
Yes.
He does. Proceed.
Thank you so much for this inquiry. I remember going through this bill in committee, and I understand what you said, but I didn't really understand what the concept was. So you want to offer this hand up program to people in two areas, one rural and one urban area?
Well, the thing is that I got the fiscal note on doing it statewide, and the fiscal note was about $600,000.
Okay,
and
so
I realize that's not a feasible thing to do, and I can still gather the information that I want with a much smaller, scaled-down version of the bill. And so I made the bill a little bit flexible, and I asked for a fiscal note which would cover just the one urban daycare and one county, which doesn't really have very many people on child care. So this way we can execute the pilot program and find out if these people really do move out of poverty and earn more money so that they can, you know, improve their existence in life.
So how did this bill come about? I mean, how did this bill come about? What inspired you to do this?
Well, I've been working on this for several years. When I was in the House, I had a committee that was designed just to look at this issue, because it's a real issue. It hurts people. And
What's it hurts people? What is it?
The thing is that if you're one of the people who are earning, say, just under $2,000 a month, and if you look at the graph that I gave you, if you go and you earn just a little bit more money, you can lose hundreds of dollars a month worth of child care benefits. And that can add up to $3,000-$4,000 a year. And the more children you have, the more you lose, because the more children you have getting daycare. So they just don't do it, and employers...
Is this an assumption that you're making? Because this seems like an assumption. I've not heard of people not wanting to work more hours because they're afraid of going a dollar up.
I will be glad to have some of the employers that we've talked to call you. One of them, you know...
It's not a statewide concern. These are just issues that... If you could tell me about how this happens in my district... You know, I would be completely open to hearing about it, but I've not heard about this.
Well,
people not wanting to make an extra dollar. Everyone who I know wants to make more money.
I believe that all I need to do is just expose you to the right employers, and you'll be a believer.
Okay, the right employers.
The ones who have
now,
this happen.
I have to tell you, Governor Nixon once said the right school districts, and I had to ask him to clarify what right was.
Well,
in his opinion, what right was
the
is
one
not,
that, an
in
example,
my opinion, what
just,
right was. So I just need to know what right company
the,
is.
I just mean
a company
one that,
is a company is a company, I thought, and they all employ people. So I'm just trying to figure out which is right. I mean, when you have subjective words,
but
like
I just meant one that exemplifies the problem. I mean, there are many. You know the Cafe Via Roma across the street? There's a lady named Audrey who runs that. And she testified in front of our committee and told about how she had an employee who, you know, she did a really good job, and she wanted to give her a promotion, and the employee denied it because she knew that she would be worse off after taking the raise, because she would lose her child care benefits and she would end up making less money than what she had, because all of the extra money she had would be going for child care.
Okay, so my next question here is that this is a voluntary program. How are you going to advertise for this program?
Well, we've worked with, have you heard of a lady named Sister Berta who runs Operation
Bridge? I know a lot of nuns, and they're all great.
She's actually here today. I think she might be. There she is, up in the gallery. And she'd be glad to come down and talk to you if you want to do that. But she runs a huge daycare in Kansas City called Operation Breakthrough, and she tells about the many single mothers who are in this position. They they like might work at a hotel and they'll actually know how many rooms they can clean before they lose their child care benefits. And so they'll agree to only work and clean so many rooms. You know, this is a big problem, especially for, you know, young mothers on getting child care.
Seems like a really complex bill. I understand when you give your two bullet overall impression of what this is supposed to do, but it is very complex and there are several different layers to it. But again, you haven't answered my question about how you're going to bring people into the Hand Up program.
Well,
and how you're going to advertise. Are you advertising with one person?
Well, no, it's the department wants to work with Operation Breakthrough, and
Wait, let's go backwards. So I thought when state departments work with entities, private entities or any entity, there's a bidding process.
Well,
so is there a bidding process?
There's a bidding process when somebody is
being... Because I can tell you there are people in St. Louis who would like to bid on something like
well,
this.
Well, then, I mean, I don't think we're locked in. That would be fine if you... In fact, I even made it so that we could have one or more. But the thing is that it's not that we're having an entity that's doing services for the state and then needs to, like, bid on those services. This is more like just somebody to participate. And if you have a bigger entity that wants to also participate, hey, I'm open
to it. But I don't understand how we can, you know, spend state dollars and not go through a bidding process for any entity that we're working with. And I don't have the new fiscal note. I have the old fiscal note. But whatever the amount may be, even if it's half the cost, $300,000, I'm trying to figure out how the Hand Up program is going to advertise to get these individuals who you're targeting.
Well, the answer
is, how are they going to get them into the program?
The answer is being that we're going to work like in the one urban area or two, it's just that that entity will be able to just tell all of the families that deal with it.
They can tell them, but that doesn't mean that they're going to participate.
No, they won't. But I'm assured by Sister Berta that if Operation Breakthrough does it, most of those women would jump at the chance because of the fact that they're going to be able to have more take-home pay and work harder and get themselves out of poverty. So I don't think that the advertising is going to be at all of a problem.
People are trying to work. They already have children, and then you're adding on another component. I mean, I just look at some of the programs that are in St. Louis. And there are multiple programs in my district that help people out. And I'm trying to figure out how the program at the Met Center in my district is going to be any different than what you're doing.
Late
St. Louis Agency on Training and Employment, they deal with these parents. There are a lot of agencies that are out here, Senator, that are trying to help get people into a higher position so they get paid more. I've heard of seniors who are on, special benefits, not working more than a certain amount of time. I know there are some legislative assistants in the House that used to only work to a certain amount of time so that they wouldn't go over. I've heard of that, but I've not heard of individuals who need a so-called hand up, not cleaning one extra room because they don't want to have benefits taken from them. Well, I mean, you know, there are 34 of us. This is something that you've heard about. This is not something that I've heard about. And I'd like to see something across the state, not just from your own district.
Well, you know, the thing is that this isn't in my district, by the way. But Sister Berta would be more than happy to meet with you in 5 minutes.
I wish that Sister Berta, and I have all respect for her, but I wish that Sister Berta was in my office last week.
Well, I'm sorry.
Or the week prior. I mean, we need more information. I see all of this stuff, and I appreciate the two-bullet summary that you're giving us, but this is very complex. I mean, you're dealing with people's paychecks in here. You're dealing with people's livelihoods in here. This is very layered.
We're estimating that only less than 50 people will be involved in the pilot program.
So 50 people, and how much are we spending as a state? Because I have the old fiscal No. So what's the new fiscal loan?
I wasn't able to get an official...
Then why are we discussing this if we don't have an up-to-date fiscal loan?
It's okay.
I'd like to know if it's 50 people, are we spending $400,000, $300,000, $200,000? The people who are suffering in my district would like to know.
Well, I have a draft fiscal note. The final one will be available soon, and I'd be glad to get you a copy. Certainly before the bill is third read. But basically, I know that I have to get the fiscal note down on the order of $50,000 in order to do this project.
So 50 people, $50,000. So it's $1,000 per person.
And that's basically...
What if we gave each of those 50 people $1,000?
Well, but that would...
That would help out with child care. That would make some offsets. You know, one of the arguments that people talked about in our special program that the president did some years ago, the bailout, the bank bailout, is if you, people like me, if you divided that money for everyone who was losing their home or losing a job or something like that, they'd be able to make it and be stable.
Well, I can tell you.
Same deal with you. If we gave $1,000
the answer is
a person.
The answer is that if we did that, we wouldn't ever answer the question of whether this pilot program could be expanded out throughout the entire state. See, the thing is, there's...
So why can't a voluntary group of people do this right now?
Well,
what's prohibiting them from doing this now?
It's the cost of the child care that would be given out. I mean, we can't... A group of private people who doesn't have the resources of the state, Senator. I mean, this is a big deal here. If we do this pilot program...
I have to disagree. You remember a conversation that we had in committee about a grandmother in my district who has this child who had four children, probably three different fathers. And the grandmother came to me and said, you know, I'm going to apply at the state to get an approval of having a daycare for my four grandchildren. And that's a problem to me in multiple ways. One, that child of hers should have known about birth control. Number two, I hope that we're not paying people to have all these multiple babies and then they can come apply at the state and then get all of these benefits. I mean, that was just such a crush on my heart when I heard about that. I mean, she should have been a better parent in my eyes, but I'm trying to figure out how your bill is going to resolve the issues for these people when they have layered lives, complex lives.
Let me ask this question.
It is my inquiry, but you can ask a question.
Thank you. Would it be possible for us to discuss this elsewhere and get you the information that you need?
Because I would like to, but let me just up that a notch. What I would like to do, because this is so layered and I'm being very genuine about this, because it is so layered, I want to go to my human-sized post-it with you in my office, and I want you to draw out what this actually means. Because right now it's so complex. And without understanding a committee, not understanding it now, not knowing what the fiscal note is, not knowing how you're going to advertise, not knowing what the voluntary process is going to look like, I can't move forward. I just can't.
There
are too many questions that are
in here.
I mean, I haven't even gotten to my next point.
Well, the bottom line of it is that I'm not going to be able to answer your questions standing here in this inquiry. I'm just not going to be able to do that. I mean, I would like to.
So how are we going to resolve
this? I can tell you the answers, but I don't think that you're going to accept them.
So how are we going to resolve this?
Well, I guess that we'll have to go into your office and answer your questions and then come back, bring it back to the floor at another time.
So are you going to make a motion?
If that's what, if you insist.
Yes.
Because, there's no sense in my wasting valuable time here.
Well, I would appreciate that, but I just want you to know that I'm just very genuine about this. With all of the programs that we have currently that the state is subsidizing, I mean, I would like for those programs, if they need to be more efficient, then they should be, but I don't want to create another program. It's a voluntary program. How are you going to draw these people in? I don't want to add another layer to the bureaucracy that we currently already have.
I don't either.
And not 2 years? You know, is that $600,000 we're spending? Is it $100,000 we're spending? You know, are these urban people who have, you know, not gotten a college education, are we trying to get them to have? I mean, there's so many questions that are out there.
I understand your concern, and so the only thing that I can offer to do is to, if you would later, while they're still here, they've come from Kansas City, maybe we could have you meet with them and you could learn about
I would enjoy that.
And then whenever your concerns are met, then we'll come back and hopefully the floor leader will let
I would enjoy that, and I appreciate that, and you know that I would not be standing here if I didn't have some real concerns about it.
All right.
Okay.
Thank you,
Mr. President.
Senator from Buchanan.
This bill will be laid on the informal calendar.
This bill will be laid on the informal calendar with Senate substitute pending. Senator from the First, what purpose do you rise?
Could I inquire the Senator from Buchanan?
Senator from Buchanan, do you yield?
Yes.
He does.
Thank
proceed.
You, Senator. While we're waiting for the Senator from the 23rd, I'm just curious, because I don't know if this bill will ever get back to the floor, but would this have added to the cost that we're currently expending on the purchase of child care in the state of Missouri?
Well, that's an unknown question, Senator, because theoretically, if we have enough people who take a raise and therefore pay a premium to the state, it could, in fact, more than offset the cost of doing the pilot program. But we're never going to know unless we do the pilot program. If it works, we could literally save the state many millions of dollars. And
well,
so,
just on that note, I mean, I would concur with the senator from the 14th in that creating another program on top of the purchase of child care that I'm looking at in our budget book that you and I looked at in the last couple of days in the Appropriations Committee. Currently, what's being expended on the purchase of child care in the state of Missouri is $188 million.
Right.
One line item. $188 million to purchase child care. All right? $62 million with the GR, $111 million of federal funds. I'm still looking for that under Article 1, Section 8 of the U.S. Constitution.
And the
$15 million coming from the boarding fees on casinos. All right, so we're buying we're purchasing child care with the boarding fees of people that are going on to casinos to lose their money. The total, $188 million worth of child care being purchased with taxpayers' dollars. Just wanted to make sure that we were all clear on that.
And the idea here is to reduce that amount by allowing people to work off of the program, because the program is so perversely constructed now with a huge cliff at the end that people won't earn any more money and they will continue to stay and get the state to pay for their child care. So the idea here is to see if it works in an experiment, not another program, just in an experiment on the current program, and allow them to go ahead and get their child care and earn more money and pay half of everything they earn over that cliff, over that maximum amount, to the state. And in doing so, they will start subsidizing their own care, earning more money, paying more taxes, and getting off of the child care program. It's the idea here is to see if we can create a method to fix the wage trap, which has trapped so many people. That's the idea. And it would be a great thing if we could do this.
All right. Thank you, Senator.
Welcome.
Senator from the 23rd.
Thank you, Mr. President. Same calendar, Senate Bill 710.
Staying on that same calendar, Senate Bill 710, the senator from St. Francis.
Thank you, Mr. President. Mr. President, I move that Senate Bill 710 be taken from the informal calendar and brought to the floor.
You've heard the motion. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
All opposed say no. The ayes appear to have it. The ayes do have it. Senator from St. Francis.
Now, Mr. President, I move that Senate Bill number 1710 be declared perfected and ordered printed. Mr. President, I have a floor sub that I'd like to send forward, and I'll be discussing that if you give me permission.
Send the Senate substitute forward. Senator, would you move the adoption of the Senate committee substitute first?
I would now move for the adoption of the Senate committee substitute for 710.
Okay.
Thank you, Mr. President. What this bill is a bill that we've talked about for several years here that we've passed through this body on several occasions before last year. And it's a bill, it's a prescription drug monitoring that 48 states have that we do not possess. Now, what the substitute is, we've been trying to work with people because there's parts of the bill that they said, well, this would work better this way or this would work better this way. We're trying to work with people to try to make it palatable because, Mr. President, make no mistake, the lack of this bill is killing people in the state of Missouri. It's killing people. There's no other way to say it. I'm going to go over some statistics here in a little bit, but I want to talk a little bit about what the actual bill summary does. It allows, in practical terms, doctors to know when their patients are doctor shopping, when they're looking around and trying to get multiple prescriptions. This is an epidemic. As I sent out to you all last week, just last week, my local paper, a lady was arrested for last year. She had gotten 108 prescriptions for 4,100 pills. Now, this bill deals with 2 to 5, which covers drugs like Oxycontin, Demerol, Vicodin, Valium, a lot of the drugs that are the most used in Missouri. Program is similar to programs that are all over the country. And one of the problems that we have here, it's similar to the programs that we have in all the states surrounding us, every state surrounding us. And what it's done is drove people across borders into St. Louis, Kansas City, all around the borders, and got them to go to doctors to try to get a prescription because we can't tell if they're lying. If they've got some sad story. Doctor told me last week was in my office when the podiatrists were up here saying they want this bill because they can't ever tell. But the one indication, if it's somebody that's not from the area, because they always say, I said, well, how come you came up from Poplar Bluff? That's an hour drive. She, oh, doctor, I heard you're the best. I heard you're the best. And I need this prescription from you. And he said, the other thing is they're always allergic to all the non-narcotic drugs when they script. But this is something I hope we're going to work on here, but just a couple statistics. 4,100 drug-related hospital ER visits in the past 2 years over this. 4,100. As testimony in committee, the first time, because this is getting so prevalent, they don't have to cook it, they don't have to worry about it, they just need to go and find the pills and sell them. Almost, I think the statistics they said were 90% of the first purchase we paid for through Medicaid. And then Medicaid keeps track, so they can't go back that month and go to another doctor. They have to go out and sell those pills and use cash for their next doctor shopping spree. And that's what they described this lady, a doctor shopping spree, since she got 108 different prescriptions from emergency rooms and doctors and dentists in the area. This will allow a doctor, when you come in with a problem, to easily type in some basic information, their ID, patient's name, address, date of prescription, dispensation of the prescription number, NDC code for the drug, and number days of supply. And the computer will then tell them if they've already had scripts of similar and when. out in the market on those people. They tell them their information. They use that information to see if there's multiple scripts out there. Statewide average expenses for these related emergency rooms was $4,180. That equates to $77 million we spent on just the ODs last year. I looked up a few counties. Mine was one of the worst. Just so happens that Buchanan and Platte County from 2007 and 2009, 81 prescription drug deaths. Legal drugs that are over prescribed, primarily because the doctors don't have the ability to know when somebody is lying to them and taking it out, using those drugs, selling them on the street for profit, and killing people. This is just two counties from 2005 to 2009. Only 14 other counties in Missouri had more deaths than in Buchanan and Platte. Unfortunately, mine was one of them. We have this happen all the time. I did a bill a few years ago because, I don't know if you know, 6.7% of Missouri students from grade 6 to 12 admitted to using prescription drugs not prescribed to them. Remember a few years ago we had to do the bill to make it illegal for them to have prescription drugs at school that they didn't have a script for? Now, they could get kicked out of school, but it was not against the law for them to have them and be dispensing them and selling them. It's happening all over the state. It was happening all over the country. But I went out and got some stats from some of the states. In Iowa, since they enacted it, they've cut in half the estimated number of scripts. The average person that they found dealing had five different sources of scripts that they were getting the drugs from. So this bill, it complies with HIPAA. There is protections. Right now you can go to a doctor with a warrant and get script records. Same thing you'd have to do here. This is not readily available, and we will tighten it up if there's some way to try to make sure that it's a department it goes through in the state that has a great record of protecting all files. But the other side of this is, actually, when we find out that some doctors are over-prescribing, like in my area, where we had a doctor from Potosi that was writing out dozens and dozens and dozens of scripts every day, some from out of state, for these drugs. And we turned him in three times to the board. They had no good way to keep track of all of his records. Kept doing it, kept killing people. The authorities in our area estimate there's over 20 deaths of prescription drugs attributed to over the prescribing by this one doctor. I know three 22-year-olds died at Rozier's Hotel. Some of you have been there. In our area, it's been there for 50 years. They've got a banquet center. Died there, ODing on prescription drugs. The parents of these people would like to know if somebody is over-prescribing, knowing that those drugs are being sold. They'd like that if their children were addicted, that they went to a doctor to make sure that that doctor had the ability to tell if they had already got a script for those type drugs. And if they're out selling them, hopefully this would stop some. Just a little more. You know, I talk about overall deaths. In Missouri, just in that four-year period of time, 2,300 deaths relating to pharmaceutical abuse. Not of them, all of them were drugs that had been sold illegally, but 2,300 deaths in that four-year period. In just one year of having the program, the state of Florida, that's another state, 97 decrease in doctor purchased OxyContin. 97% decrease. This is costing us millions of dollars on our Medicaid. It's costing us hundreds of lives every year. We are only one of two states. Even Guam has taken this up. District of Columbia, all of the 48 states, why we sit and do nothing. I know this body has enacted it and voted on it before, but we need to do it again. I know tonight's just an opening round of the thing. I understand there's going to be some talking, but I wanted to get some of these things out there because this is the fastest growing abused areas of illegal drugs. Now, the drugs themselves aren't illegal, but how they're obtained are illegal. And the increase in that abuse is estimated at 142% from 2004 to 2009. That's last year, so I could get the statistics. This does at least some basic steps to ensure that when a doctor sees a patient and prescribes some drugs for pain, that they can, with pretty good conscience, tell that they're not being trying to be taken. And that the person that they're prescribing for them is not somebody who's going to go out and sell them on the open market because they've already had multiple scripts. There is a required education course, which will be quick and easy online, free of charge. There is no cost to institute this. And if the dispenser knowingly fails to submit the information or submits incorrect information, they will be subject to a fine administered by DHSS. Anyone who discloses dispensation information is guilty of a Class A misdemeanor. The information submitted is not subject to public disclosure. Law enforcement agencies must have ongoing investigation on an individual and must obtain a subpoena or court order to gain access to the records in the monitoring system. The information must be reported by the dispenser at least every 7 days. So what's going to happen, if they go around quick, they can get a couple more scripts before we can catch them. But at least it will cut it down some because the average abuser goes to 5 different providers. With that, Mr. President, I'll be happy to start answering the questions and accepting any amendments that would truly make this a better bill.
The senator from St. Francis moves the adoption of the Senate substitute. Does any senator desire to be heard on that motion? Senator from Buchanan, for what purpose do you rise?
Inquire of the senator from St. Francis.
Senator from St. Francis, do you yield?
I yield.
He does. Proceed.
Thank you, Senator. I know that you know that I'm
organizing a filibuster.
Opposed to your bill.
Yeah.
I've been opposed to it for years.
Why? Tell me why. I really like to know because I can't figure out why a doctor would be opposed to it.
You know, I have told you in the past that this is a terrible infringement upon liberty. This is...
More than death?
Well, see, you have said that this bill, the absence of this bill, kills people. I don't think
it does.
No, I don't think so. I don't think it does. I think that...
Do you think all these pills that are out in the community and people are dying from OD, that having some restriction on them wouldn't save them at all?
Well, at what price, Senator?
That's a great question. Last week you said...
Well, let me ask you this. Are you in favor of the helmet law?
Am I in favor of it?
Yeah.
I'm in favor if they can come up with a way that they can cover the costs.
So you wouldn't repeal the helmet law?
I would, in fact, if they could come up with some responsible way for a rider, because they should have the right to...
What about the seatbelt? You think we should repeal the seatbelt law?
I think we should either repeal it or enforce it, primary.
Okay. Well, the thing about it is you mentioned controlled substances, and then you also mentioned prescription drugs. And you gave some statistics about prescription drug deaths. Well, I have to tell you, as a physician, I've seen lots of prescription drug deaths.
2,300 relating to pharmaceutical abuse.
Right, pharmaceutical abuse. Taking
and where are those pills going, coming
taking
from?
Taking too much Coumadin and having your blood be too thin and dying of a bleed or taking too much, Aleve.
But
and,
you're and saying out here tonight and that you believe that the overprescription of drugs of like OxyContin are contributing to no deaths in Missouri. That's what you're saying?
I didn't say that. Well, I'm sure that...
You just said that it wasn't killing people. Now you're saying that you won't say that it's not killing people.
No, I didn't say that. You're misquoting me, Senator. What I said
was... Is it killing people or not?
Well,
I won't misquote you. Is it killing people or not, the drug abuse?
Well,
killing people or not?
Senator, are you asking me if some people die of taking too many narcotics? Yeah, sure, there are
that are illegally prescribed.
But your bill isn't going to stop idiots from doing that. They're not going to stop criminals.
You're saying that this will not, by monitoring it,
Senator,
so a doctor... No,
Senator,
go ahead.
When you ask me a question, you ought to let me answer. And I would be...
I asked you several questions, and you wouldn't tell me if it was killing people or not.
It is my inquiry, and I was asking you about the difference between prescription drugs and controlled substances. That statistic about all those people that died of prescription drug abuse,
forget the thousands. The three people in Farmington that died from OxyContin that was sold to them by somebody that was falsely claiming they had pain.
And so
those people are they dead.
And so you think
just those three people.
You think that in order
how many is too many? Is three too few?
Well, Senator.
Two. We won't even talk about all three of them.
Well, Senator.
Were two too few? Because they died, and that was proven in court.
At what price, Senator?
So two's okay to kill.
Well, my question for you is, what about all those people who never broke the law, who don't abuse drugs?
This won't affect them.
And, yes, it will.
How's that?
You want to have a big brother, have a big, gigantic database of every citizen's controlled substances in the land on the government database. I mean, come on.
They already have that.
And you're saying that just because you put them on this database and doctors then check it, that people won't use a fake ID and go and get the drugs, that they won't get the drugs by stealing them or some other method.
No, but we're making it easy. We're opening the door and saying, come on in.
You know, and not only that, but...
The other 48 states are wrong,
is that
right?
What if the person goes to one doctor every month and gets the drugs? You're not going to stop those people in Farmington from dying of...
You're absolutely right. The average is five. They get it from five sources.
This bill does not do that.
Well, make it do that, then.
Well, I have to tell you that I don't want my controlled substances that are prescribed for me put on a government database.
You would rather people die. Is that what you're saying?
Well, if
the
it were a
people
choice,
in Farmington,
I mean,
that was proven in court.
That's not a real choice here.
It's the choice I'm faced with. It's the choice everybody in this body is faced with.
I don't believe that if you put my controlled substances on a database, that's going to stop people from dying, Senator.
I'm going to quote you. There are three ways to make sure a hospital or any provider really does a better job.
Yeah,
the first is
regulation.
Regulation.
And the second.
At what cost, Doc? At what cost, Senator, that regulation? You said there's cost. What cost?
Are you mixing
apples and oranges? You're just talking about regulation. You're talking
about that. You're trying to, make some argument based upon some totally unrelated thing that I was talking about. Regulation,
competition, comes first.
And the tort system, Senator.
The patient, the constituent comes first. Their health comes first. That's a different subject.
Well, I would
Let's
say
get back
that,
to how many deaths are okay.
I would say
you.
That...
For not imposing on them. How many deaths? Is
well,
there a number that
question.
You've got
How
in your mind?
How much liberty are you willing to give up in order to have the security of having no deaths? How much liberty are you willing to give up? Let's make it so that the speed limit is 5. Let's make it so that the speed limit
Talking
is
about
5.
Switching
that
subjects.
Way we won't have anybody dying in any motor vehicle accidents. Are you in favor of people dying in motor vehicle accidents, Senator? How many is okay? I mean, should we lower the speed limit from 70 to 5 on the interstate?
You know,
my God, how many is okay?
Never have we had a clearer choice of knowing what's killing people and you not want to do something.
Oh, yes. Senator, if I'm a drug seeker...
What level is okay?
If I'm a drug seeker, yes. If you put your bill into effect, I'll go to the doctor, and if I've gone twice in the same month and got my 90 pills, or however much, the doctor will say, I'm not going
lady
to
last
give
week,
you that 4,100
pills.
But if I just go
40,
once a month,
100.
And I get the pills that I don't really need anyway, and then I go sell them on the street, the kid in Farmington is still going to die.
4,100.
Well, I mean, I'm sorry that you,
I gotta ask
you believe
this.
That.
Did you take the Hippocratic Oath or the hypocritical?
The 4,100 referred to prescription drugs, not controlled substances, Senator. You're misquoting your own statistic.
The what? The 4,100 is what?
Well, did you not say when you quoted the statistic that it was prescription drugs?
Yes.
And you do know that there's a difference between prescription drugs and the subset of prescription drugs called...
One lady. 108 prescriptions. 4,100 OxyContin. One lady.
doctor shopping.
I want to 108, 41, I want to support your bill, but I just want to do it.
No, you don't want to support my bill.
So I'm going to offer an amendment to take the monitoring program out. And then I will support your bill once that we make it so that
we don't monitor.
We don't create this gigantic government.
I'm really wanting to know, what is it, the point that you don't want people to know what the doctors are prescribing? Or that you don't want the doctors to be able to know if there's been scripts out? I'm serious. Is it you don't want...
You're serious?
I am serious. Well, you say you... Well, you're serious. I'll take the monitoring out of the monitoring bill program. Okay, that's serious.
I am
serious. What is it? Is it that you don't want the doctors to know that if somebody's been doctor shopping? Or
I don't want a government database with a private citizen's private health information on a government database. That's a horrible concept.
You don't deal with that now when you
no, not only that, but not all those 48
we
states
already
have
do
a
this
drug
on
monitoring
Medicaid
program. You do know that several of the states haven't put it into effect because they didn't budget it. They passed the bill, but they didn't budget it. You know that's true.
You don't have to budget this.
Okay.
You can make this subject to appropriations if you'd like. That might be a good amendment.
You know, I know some pharmacists, and they say, pharmacists know who these drug seekers are. How about this? I'll make a compromise for you. Let's make it so that pharmacists that call up the BNDD or the police or whoever receive some immunity from prosecution for having called. How about that? Then we won't have to have everybody's...
We actually have immunity. I'm glad you agree with that part of the bill.
Let's leave that part in the bill. But let's just take out the drug monitoring that creates the big database.
Well, Senator, you're going to offer your amendment. That's fine. I hope this body has the fortitude this year at some point. I know it won't be tonight.
I hope they do.
To stand and let you talk.
Can I?
Because people are dying, so you can offer that amendment.
Can I ask you a question?
You can ask whatever
you want. How come your chair is a different green than everybody else's chair? I've always wanted to know that.
I don't know. Maybe you could write a book. How green is my chair? I don't know the answer to that.
I was just curious. I mean, there's something about your chair that's it's just a different green, you know?
Well, Senator, I know you don't want database, and I know you've got some people to agree with you on that. I am firmly convinced that the lack of the ability for doctors to look into a system and tell somebody...
I know that you're firmly convinced.
You don't want that if somebody comes in to find out if they've...
I know that you are convinced, and I thank you for the inquiry. Mr. President?
Senator from Buchanan.
I have an amendment.
Send your amendment forward.
It has not been distributed. I would ask you to waive the reading, and I won't close until the amendment has been distributed.
Seeing no objection, the reading will be waived. We will not vote on it until the amendment has been distributed.
I wasn't able to get it drafted up because of the quick dropping of the Senate sub. And I would, Mr. President, I would ask to inquire of the senator from the
Senate. Senator, have you moved the adoption of the amendment?
Adoption of the amendment.
Senator from Buchanan moves the adoption of Senate Amendment Number 1 to Senate Substitute for Senate Bill 710. Does any senator desire to be heard on that motion?
Inquire of the senator from the first.
The senator from Buchanan. Senator, you are recognized to speak on the bill, and you would like to inquire the senator from St. Francis. Senator from St. Francis?
Senator from the first.
I'm sorry. The senator from the first. Senator from the first.
Mr. President.
Three senators standing. For what purpose do you rise?
You lay this bill on the informal calendar.
This bill will be laid on the informal calendar with Senate Amendment Number 1 pending. Senator from Stoddard, for what purpose do you rise?
Thank you, Mr. President. Would you please refer Senate Committee Resolution 26 and Senate Committee concurrent Resolution 27 to the Committee on Rules, Joint Rules, Resolutions, and Ethics?
Those bills will be so referred. The senator from the 23rd.
Thank you, Mr. President. Would you see if there are messages from the House?
Are there messages from the House? There are messages from the House. And would, Madam Secretary, would you please read the messages from the House?
Mr. President, I'm instructed by the House of Representatives to inform the Senate that the House has taken up and passed House Bill 1349, an act relating to irrevocable life insurance trusts. Also, House Bill 1114, an act relating to emergency service boards. Also, House Bill 1037, an act relating to the compensation of road district commissioners. Also, House Committee substitute for House Bill 1072, an act relating to the Volunteer Health Services Act, in which the concurrence of the Senate is respectfully requested. Respectfully, Daniel Adam Crumlish, Chief Clerk.
Senator from Stoddard.
I have the original.
President, would you please refer to the Committee on Ways and Means and Fiscal Oversight, Senate Bill 699, with a Senate substitute?
That will be so referred. Senator from the 23rd.
Thank you, Mr. President. Without objection, the Senate will go to the order of business of announcements.
Announcements. Announcements. Senator from the 23rd.
Thank you, Mr. President. No further business coming before the body. I move the Senate stand adjourned under the rules.
You've heard the motion. All those in favor say aye. All opposed say no. The ayes appear to have it. The ayes do have it. We are adjourned under the rules.